Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, December 19th, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 712-770-4160, and our participant code is 385968. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send a question to questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab up on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture is going to be two short scriptures, one out of Matthew and the other out of John. Matthew chapter 1, verses 18 through 25. Now the birth of Jesus Christ was on this wise. When as his mother was espoused to Joseph, before they came together, she was found with child of the Holy Ghost. Then Joseph, her husband, being a just man and not willing to make her a public example, was minded to put her away privately. But while he thought on these things, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a dream, saying, Joseph, thou son of David, fear not to take unto thee Mary thy wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Ghost. And she shall bring forth a son, and thou shalt call his name Jesus, for he shall save his people from their sins. Now all this was done that it might be fulfilled which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, Behold, a virgin shall be with child, and shall bring forth a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which being interpreted is God with us. Okay, that was Matthew chapter 1, verses 18 through 23 or 24 I read. Okay, we're also going to look another short verses over in John chapter 1, verses 1 through 14. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was the life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness, to bear witness of that light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true life, that true light which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh, and dwelt among us. And we knew his glory, the glory as the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bare witness of him, and cried, saying, This was he of whom I spake. He that cometh after me is preferred before me, for he was before me. And of his fullness have all we received, the grace for and grace for grace. For the law was given to Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. No man seen God at any time, the only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him. That was John chapter 1, verses 1 through 18. Okay, let's see. Tonight we don't particularly have a topic. Just want to let everybody know we did file a redress for grievances in the Federal District Court in the New York Northern District here. And we filed it on December 14th. So we filed it this week. And we will be, we haven't served the papers yet. We're preparing that now. They should be going out probably this week. It should hit them right after Christmas. So that's when they should be, you know, receiving these papers. And we've got a lot of papers that we've that we have written. You can find them up on nationallibertyalliance.org. Go to the blue bar on the right side, highlight the grand jury, and click on docket. or you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org/docket. And you can see now we've made note of the fact that we have filed this court. It is a landmark case. We do want to get the word out. We're probably doing some YouTube videos on this and really trying to encourage people to get involved and get behind what we're doing. And the bottom line is to become educated and come to an understanding of these things. But anyway, you can read all the papers here. I don't know whether we've read all these papers. I don't think we have read all of these papers online. We've got quite a few papers that we filed. We filed on the left-hand side, the first list on the left-hand side, when you come down a couple of paragraphs, you'll see papers filed. We filed a summons, of course, a statement of jurisdiction, table of contents, a list of defendants, and then we filed redress of grievances to Congress, redress of grievance to the Supreme Court, redress of grievance to the governors, and redress of grievance to the presidents. And the governor's really more of an information than anything else. We're not expecting them to really respond. We're trying to inform them, and hopefully they will respond correctly in action. We're also sending, we also have a memorandum of jurisdiction, a memorandum of jury tampering and stacking, information concerning martial law, which we had filed in all 94 courts, and we're going to refile that in this case. Memorandum of articles, three court, memorandum of founding documents, memorandum of facts, memorandum of grand jury authority, and we do have also a copy to the President-elect Trump, a letter that we had sent to him with this whole package prematurely that was delivered by hand. I don't know whether it's been delivered yet. We'll ask Robert maybe what he might know. Robert, what do you know about that right now? Has that well, actually, we put it on CD.
It's in the works, delivered? But it has not reached him yet.
Okay. Do we have an anticipation day?
I don't at this time. I'm trying to find out.
Okay. Well, we'll look in next week and see what you know then.
All right.
Thank you. Okay, also, we have here quite a bit of evidence that we'll be filing. We have not filed that into the court yet, but we will be filing a copy of all the evidence into the court. We have a lot of law documents that we make reference to, and we also have information in writs that we've been filing over the past year. There's about 15 of them or so. We are going to be filing those into the court. So we've got a lot of papers going into the court. Reading all these papers is in itself an education. So again, anybody who really wants to learn to write papers and learn how to file papers, because in here is really the whole process of filing. You got a summons, you want to give a statement of jurisdiction, just follow the list, just pretty much that we have. You do want to do memorandums on specific topics that you want to make note of without having to put a lot of information into the action. They call it a complaint. We call what we're doing is an action. So, you know, we'll make mention of a jurisdiction and we refer to the memorandum for the detail and expounding on the fact of what is the facts, okay? Matter of fact, we do also have a memorandum on the facts of the case. Again, important things that you might want to break away so that when you write your papers, particularly, you know, your action at law, that you're very specific and focused. And you don't want to get long-winded on many things, and you don't want to make that too long either, you know. So that's why these memorandums are good to do. You can pretty much use a lot of our memorandums in almost any case, or take it apart, use pieces of it, and create your own memorandum, or however you want to do it. But anyway, there's a lot of information when you bring all this paperwork together that we put together here and read through it. It's an education. That coupled with our constitutional course and our civics course should give you a pretty good, appreciation of the law and understanding of the Constitution and be able to pretty much write a case in a court. Today, the big argument or the big complaint or the problems in the court that we have to fight is jurisdiction and due process. They never give us due process and they never bring us to the proper jurisdiction. So that's always where the battle is. Once we get to the other side of things, we don't need to worry too much about those two particular situations because we should be back into the jurisdiction where we belong, and we will be getting due process. And without that due process, nobody should be brought into a courtroom to answer about anything. And once we get there, you know, it's pretty cut and dry. They're really just going to argue the facts of the case if you had to go to court and not have to argue with the judge over jurisdiction and due process and the abuse, deal with all the abuse that they put upon the people. Okay. So anyway, people should go there and read these things. Jen, do we have any questions? I think we spoke earlier. So I think you said you had a few.
Yes, we have half a dozen this week. The first one, last week on the Courtroom Observer call, someone said that New York clerks have a clause that says they can refuse to file whatever documents they want to. Is that true?
Never heard of such a thing, and it would be against the rules of the court across the board, and against the law, as a matter of fact, because the law says the clerk must file. So they can't make any rules that would say that. If they did, it would just be another, you know, breaking of the law that they do. So I'm not aware of it. Matter of fact, maybe that person can try to look to find and get a copy of that so we can look at that.
Okay. The next question, could you please explain the difference between freedom and liberty?
Well, that's a good question. You know, freedom ultimately is the freedom to be able to walk around, do things, wear brown shoes or black shoes, make decisions. I think that's really pretty much the freedom to do what you please. Liberty has to do with freedom or liberty in the sense of unalienable rights, you know. Your unalienable right of free speech and unalienable right of property. And everything begins with property. To understand that property is the basics. You know, your first piece of property is your body. That belongs to you. That's between you and God. And how you deal or treat that property is totally between you and God. So when maybe a government comes in to try to control your behavior, you shouldn't smoke some pot, or you shouldn't smoke cigarettes, or you shouldn't do this, or you shouldn't do that, you know, that's none of their business. And that's a whole big difference from liberty and, you know, when we look at freedom and liberty. A lot of people who believe that they're free will agree that that government should control certain things. We should have driver's licenses, which gives us the right to travel, which, of course, unalienable rights gives us the right to travel. So you can't hinder that. You can't restrict that. Well, a lot of people might agree with that, that think that they're free. But so they don't have really have liberty. They don't have to understand liberty. Liberty is your decision to do what you wish or decide to do what you want with your body, as long as you don't offend or injure another. You know, there are certain things, of course, you wouldn't do in public that would be your business in private. I guess that's the best I can explain it. You know, the due process is a right of liberty. you know, it's ultimately the basis of liberty. You know, you have to have due process in order to protect that liberty. And, you know, a lot of people will just accept whatever the judge says up there. And, you know, again, they're living in the world of being free, but not living in the world of liberty. So I think that's the best I can explain. Anyway, what's the next question?
Okay, could you please explain the difference between a monetary collapse and an economic collapse?
Yeah, an economic collapse is basically something when you have an economy problem and you have an economic collapse maybe within a country or something of that nature. A monetary, and you know, in other words, you have a depression or you have a recession. Those can be bringing us down into an economic collapse. But a monetary collapse is the collapse of the dollar itself, okay? And that's not necessarily caused by anything economics, although that does play a role to it, the fact that they have destroyed the dollar and we don't have a monetary system. And I don't even know that we can even say we have a monetary system at this point because we have what's called federal notes, which is just debt. And whoever has the most dollars, the most debt at the end of the game, when the final collapse comes, is the biggest loser. So the least amount of money you have, the least amount of dollars you have in your pocket, you're not as big a loser as those who have millions or whatever in their pockets. But anyway, that is supposed to be our monetary system, and when that collapses, it's a total new thing. And as a matter of fact, with our case here, it affects the entire world. It's not just the economy of our own nation, although the economy of one nation will affect the economy of another nation, but won't necessarily collapse the other nation. In our case, a monetary system, because the dollar was made, the money of the world, you know, the monetary system of the world, which again is a joke because it's not really a monetary system, it's a debt. But in any event, when that collapses, it's felt around the world. We all feel it. Every country feels it. Anyway, okay. That's the best I could do on that one.
In legal contemplation, please explain the importance of having proof of claim and fiduciary authority of a house and accompanying property, especially where it concerns the state stealing homes from we the people without holding either.
Right. Yeah, you know, anytime anything happens, if someone wants to take a piece of property of yours, they're claiming it's theirs, or they're trying to sue you and take money or whatever, you know, there has to be a proof of that. There has to be, you know, affidavits and some proof of a contract or something or whatever the case may be. And in the case, for instance, when the federal government acts upon a lien through the IRS, let's say, which the IRS is not really federal government, but they go around charading and make believe they are, and they no government official will deny or agree with them being a government entity. But anyway, when the IRS comes to take your property, they do what's called a process in rem, I-N-R-E-M. And that really is the law of the sea. It's exercised at sea where a nation may hold a right to a particular piece of property for whatever reason out at sea, and they'll claim a right to that property. Generally speaking, usually in rem means that they at some point had some prior right to that property. That's the key. In piracy, for instance, it becomes a prize to the nation. If some nation at sea was to discover piracy and they could take the ship and bring it back to the port and they've confiscated that, they have a right to the prize, and it's a process of what's called in rem. They didn't have to file the paperwork when they dock it and take a process in rem. And they take fiduciary authority over the process, over the product or the process, and they also take a proof of claim over that. Those are the two documents that need to be filed in the court. So the local governments, when they seize a house, usually a town is involved, and they're in cahoots with the county, and all the towns in the county are cahoots with the county, and the county creates their own little law, which they don't have the authority to create law, but they do create their statutes or codes, and they call them law, and then they exercise them as law. You'll find in county codes, for instance, it'll talk about taking property away for taxes in a process called in rem. And again, in rem means that in this particular case, that they have a fiduciary authority over that property. That means they had some hold on that ownership for some reason or another. Now, they can't prove that, and that's why they never filed the forms, the necessary form. The two forms that are filed is the form 56 and the 4490. I'm not sure which is which. I think the 56 is the fiduciary, and the other 4490 is the proof of claim. But it could be the other way around. In any event, the other thing they have to file is a proof of claim. And those are the two things that makes a seizure in rem okay to do. So if what they're really saying is claiming ownership of your property. And people don't understand that. Now, when they file the paperwork in the county or they file a paperwork with you, they usually let you know that... when it's coming from the federal government particularly, they'll tell you that this is a notice of lien. And people will argue the fact that this is not a notice of lien. What are you talking about? And they'll argue in the court that it's just a notice of lien. It's not a lien. And the judge will look at you and say, yeah, and move the court case along. So you have to challenge the lien. The lien is filed in the federal courthouse in the district. They're not telling you that part. And if you don't challenge that, then the judge is ignoring you. He already knows what you're talking about, but he's ignoring you. He's part of the scam. But if you bring it up, now it becomes a problem. They have to deal with it. So you have to challenge the fact that they don't have these two papers. One is, again, fiduciary authority, making some kind of claim of ownership on your property by some right, whatever that right, a right to that property is really what it is. Usually at sea, again, it's the right of seizure, the prize of a pirate ship or something like that. But they can't prove any of that. And again, the proof of claim, which says you owe us X amount of dollars and this is the property worth or whatever the case may be. So they don't have any of those two things. It used to be, years ago, when they would bring these papers to the county clerk to file, they would be rejected unless they would come with the necessary sworn affidavit concerning the fact that there was a lien or something somewhere in federal courts. They didn't want that to be exposed, so they never, and they would never file it anyway. But eventually, somehow, they got around all that, and it seems that all the counties seem to accept these days. And so they filed this notice of lien in the county, and then after they go through the process, they'll take your property. And they usually will steal your property before you even get into court, because, again, they've already filed a lien, and they're saying they have fiduciary authority over it, so they grab control over it, and then you have to fight for your property back or whatever the case may be. So you could have your bank account seized, you could have your property seized, and so on and so forth, all without even ever being in a court yet. Your court date is yet to come. And that all depends if they really want to fight that and if you're going to fight it. All right, hopefully I explained that enough.
Okay. The next question is there anyone in the group who is knowledgeable in common law liens? This person has one and would like someone to take a look at it.
A common law lien. Well, I'd have to see the definition of what a common law lien is and what they mean that they have one, so I wouldn't know how to go about that. You know, look, a lien is a lien. The only lien, if you want to put it under common law, would be one that you go to court and you win in the court, and in the wherefore clause, it clearly lays out what it is you're going after, and if it's a value in dollars, and you can now go seize properties, and a lien is given out, you place the lien onto the properties that you're going to seize eventually, and you go through the process to bring it into the court so you could take the property as payment for what is owed to you for breaking a contract or whatever it was that was taking place. I don't know any other way to put a lien on anything other than a mechanics lien. Now, mechanics lien is the only lien I know that you can do prior to going to court. And so you could put a mechanics lien in on a piece of property or something as a contractor. I'm very familiar with that part of it as being a contractor. You can go into the court, make a sworn affidavit concerning the fact that, excuse me, hang on a minute. make a point of the fact that that you had done work there and you hadn't been paid and you had materials on the property and so on and so forth, and you make the lien to protect your right. Now, you can't exercise that lien to take that property away. What you're doing is reserving a place in that property, a lien on that property, until this problem is satisfied. But liens, in New York, I know they last, I think, 8 or 9 months, and then you have to renew them again. And I think there's a limitation on how many times you could renew it also. They don't stay on forever. You have to complete that process in the court. If you don't get, finally at the end of the game, you don't get paid, then you can utilize that fact that you've put a right onto that property as first liener. They do this with cars also. And I presume that's legal. I don't see why not. You owe a bill to the person who you took the loan out on, and the lien is removed when the loan is paid. Anything else?
Okay. Yes, I have one last one. In our letter to President Donald Trump, at the bottom of page 1, it states, the NLA's goal is to establish a jury administration of 4 people in each of America's 3,133 counties for the grand jury and trial jury administration for the orientation, advising, and assisting of writing of indictments and informations. Should the words common law and presentment have been included? Would it It'd be more than if it had read. NLA's goal is to establish a jury administration of four people in each of America's 3,133 counties for the common law grand jury and trial jury administration for the orientation, advising, and the assisting of the writing of presentments, indictments, and informations.
Well, that's a good idea. I think we did leave out presentments, but that's still part of the process of the juries anyway. But as far as putting the word common law in there, we could have done that. I think we do it only with the grand jury, the, you know, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, or we talk about the Common Law Grand Jury. We mainly do that so they don't come out after us claiming to be something that we're not, which would be really statutory inside their process. So we've put the line in the sand right in the beginning. Here in New York, they latched onto that very quickly to make the separation, and they liked that idea if you made the separation. But later on, I think it hurt them because now they it faults them now from us claiming that we're them. We're not claiming anything that we're them. But nevertheless, once the courts are brought back into the proper process under the law of the land, then every grand jury and every trial jury must be a common law grand or trial jury. There's no other grand jury or trial jury possible to exist in a common law court. And that's the and a common law court is one under the law of the land. The Constitution has already settled that, so there's nothing, you know, we didn't really have to get redundant there. So we didn't. But we were redundant on the fact that this was a common law court in the sense that we made the fact that it was a court of record operating under the rules of the common law, and I think we said that numerous times throughout our papers.
Right.
Okay, that was the last one?
That's the last one for tonight.
Okay, thank you. Okay, hey, is Gerard here yet? I don't see him in the room yet. Right. Okay, I guess what we'll do... Huh?
I don't see him yet.
Okay, is Brent here? Brent, are you here? I didn't see him in here either.
No, I didn't either. Missing.
I'd like to have Ollie give an update on Joe.
All right, let's do this before we do. Well, okay, let's let Ollie give an update on Joe. Do you see Ollie in there, Jen?
Yep,
I just
unmuted him.
Unmute him, and then what we'll do is maybe you can look through the list to see if Brent's in. Maybe he came in under without coming in under, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Ollie's all clear now.
Ollie,
hello,
go right
am
ahead.
I on? Hello.
Hello, Ollie.
Yeah, okay. It's Joe's case is just like the national situation. There's many things going on now. It's hard to keep up with. It's all you. Want an emotional yo-yo. All the doubt and indecision now is on the other side. They don't know what's going to happen going into next year. Okay. I don't know if it was late Saturday night or early Sunday morning. Lindsay got a packet from Joe. Hadn't heard from him in 2 weeks. Lo and behold, it was the rest of the papers in the original legal package. Okay, out of that, we got two very important things. We got the signed medical power of attorney for Carrie, Joe's wife, and Lindsay. Okay, with that, they're getting the medical records already from the VA. Also, he's got a signed form for Mr. Bailey and Mr. Smith to receive the psychological, medical, and disciplinary records, which we're going to mail another letter and request those and then put some more pressure on them regarding health care. The also, there are some letters in there, they were hard to read. His eyesight's getting worse and whatnot. But he made the statement that Mr. Bailey and Mr. Smith's letter made one impact. because that's when they gave him the rest of the stuff. Now, this was dated a week, 2 weeks ago. For some reason, this package was unsealed. There's a note in there to please seal this, but it wasn't sealed. So we're investigating that. I'm having Lindsay make an affidavit on that. Joe, to refresh your memory, Joe is without commissary, outside phone calls for 90 days. Okay, so he's isolated. However, he's getting word out through friends, and they're gladly doing it so they can get their word out too. There's a general wide-scale abuse in all the prisons and all the county jails, and that they're being isolated. But in that process, we are giving them hope. Well, one of our goals was to give Joe hope through the holidays, and we accomplished that goal. By standing across the street and waving flags and sending that letter in and getting things going. Okay. We're also giving hope to other prisoners, including those out in Nevada. In this operation, I have seen a lot of miracles. I see miracles every day. The timing of things, what's going on. Strangers coming in that's wanting to do something. All of a sudden, they've got their mission. But we are making progress. I pray that Joe can hold together, and I pray all these prisoners can hold together going into for a few more weeks, getting through the holidays, because I'll guarantee you, going into February next year, it is going to be a different ball game. When Sessions takes over as AG, it's going to help our job. It's going to make our job a lot easier. But that's about it. And we still got.
You also have the mainstream media jumping in with both feet on this now, too.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say that the original Fox 31 reporter, he's got all the papers, which he's been studying. He's going to do a big follow-up. But all these, they all are aware of what's going on in the prisoners, in the prisons. A guy died out here in Denver County Jail a couple weeks ago. I'm running out of here again. Died, he got pneumonia, and then a week later he was dead. They're wanting to get all this out in the open. Also, we still got KCNC hot for an interview. I'll just add one more thing. The original reporter that approached Lindsay, that they are going through some property deals with the feds, so they've got a very strong motive to do this. And the reporter from KCNC is about the same way. They are very hot to trot on this, and we're going to get some solid, no BS, no liberal slant reports out of this. We're making good progress.
Did you want to mention his possible pneumonia?
Yeah, he's. I don't know when that word, this word got out, but he's got phlegm now, and it very possibly could be pneumonia. But I know a lot of people have had that phlegm. I had it for many months. It could be pneumonia. I'm not sure, but in that prison, It was built in the 40s. No air circulation. All the prisoners in our coffin and have respiratory problems. So, but that is, Joe needs a wellness check. He needs a doctor check now. And hopefully a little bit of more pressure. And for some strange reason, the politicians don't want to get involved. Nobody wants to get involved. Well, we don't have jurisdiction. I'm so tired of that word. We don't have jurisdiction, or we don't get politically involved. I'm so tired of that I could scream.
Yeah, one of the problems with that, or the reasons for that, is ultimately, remember, is the federal government, the federal agencies that wanted these people in jail, and they were determined to have that done. And ask yourself the question, well, who is in charge of the federal agencies? That goes right to the administration itself. And that's why we're hoping we're not going to have this problem with Trump. If this continues with Trump, then Trump's as rotten as this other guy in the White House right now. So that's where it stems from. And then the order goes into the court, to the judge, to make sure there's a conviction here. Okay? So everybody's working for a conviction. They even set the staged for the jury so that there's a conviction that's going to come through here. And that's why when you go to Congress or anyplace else, they can't do nothing. Their hands are tied. Now, you know, we can try to do something with show cause, which eventually we'll be doing with the court case that we're opening here. But we have a lot of paperwork to get in the next week or so, and then we'll try to pursue some other things of this nature. But anyway, that's why it's getting nowhere. By the way, is he getting his medications now, or they have refused him his medications?
Well, hopefully, when they get the VA medical records, see, the VA had him balanced PTSD and all his other health problems. You know, he's been with the VA like me for years. And after a while, they know you inside and out. Well, hopefully when they get the VA records, they'll start giving them the right medications for PTSD and all his other physical problems. Because as you know, pills, you got to have a delicate balance. You got to have the right ones in the right proportions. But
Well, at this time, though, no, he's not getting his medications.
No.
Okay. All right, anything else, Ali?
No, that's about it. Any more questions?
Let me open up the Q&A to see if anybody else have any questions for this issue. Robert, do you have anything to add to this?
No, I'm done.
Okay. If anybody has any questions or anything concerning those cases out there for Ali, you can pick up, hit the *6 and get into the queue. Let's see, we got Mike from New York. Go right ahead. You got a question for Ali or for Robert? What's going on out west?
This is Watchdog, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier when you were talking about the filing of the county clerk paperwork. That was me. That was a question that I had brought up on Wednesday to the group, and the county clerk wouldn't file an affidavit with an exemption form. That was the county form for an exemption of taxes, and she looked at it, and she gave it to their attorney, and she came back, and she said, I'm not filing it. And I said to her, it was my friend, and I walked over to her, and I said, why aren't you going to file this? She said, because it's fraud. I said, how could it be fraud? It's an affidavit of fact. And besides that, it's your form, that he filled out your form. And she says, I don't know. I don't care. I'm just not going to file it.
Mm-hmm.
So we were wondering if we had any recourse to her.
Well, yeah, you do. You have to take her. Is this what court were you taking her in? The state court? Or what court are you in?
It was Erie County, the clerk's office. It was paperwork that was going to be used as evidence in two other court cases for my friend. And she wouldn't file them and we wanted to have them on file so that we could use the LIBOR numbers and the index number.
No, you don't need a LIBOR number then for that. That wouldn't be the proper way to do it anyway. They don't have the authority to refuse the filing of this paperwork, but they have been, they've been doing that across the nation everywhere. You know, if you're looking for sort of a LIBOR number or something so that you can then refer to it in court. Now, what you need to do is bring up that paper into the court case. If the court case arises, then bring that information to the court case directly. I'm not sure exactly what's in the paperwork that you're really putting in there. I know a lot of people like to do, make statements and put it into the record, you know, concerning their standing, I guess. But that's not really necessary. A lot of people feel it is, but it's not really necessary. But go ahead.
Right. Okay, going back to, you said something, you were talking about common law liens.
Right.
In 1993 and 1994, I was on the process of losing two pieces of property on the property taxes, two properties that were paid for in full, and they were taken away for property tax, so I decided to fight them. Well, before I started fighting them, well, in the duration, actually before they took the properties, I filed a common law lien on both properties. And
well,
at that time,
when you filed common law lien, I'm presuming what you did is you filed the fact that there was that property outright owned to you at that point, or you were still paying the bank?
Yes, it was outright. I owned it outright. It was all paid for.
Okay, so you really were just making the fact that you had a lien on your own property. They were trying to do a civil thing on it. That's kind of a little different thing. It's your property. You own it. You're making the point. My lien's on the property. You got to satisfy that lien before you take that property. I would imagine you'd have to beat them out at the court filing. Did you have to do that, or you didn't, or what?
Well, I never even had a chance to go to court. I had this duly filed in Erie County and one in Cattaraugus County. And this time
okay, so you filed a lien. You filed a lien on your own property, which is appropriate in a sense because you're making the claim that they're going to try to steal it from you using civil court. So you filed this lien on your own property, and then they never made it into court.
No. Well, they just took my property away on the property taxes. So I have these two liens, and I don't know how to collect on them.
Oh, well, you know, you have more than that. You have a robbery here. You have to report a robbery. Of course, you can't do it right now because there's no process for that.
Right.
There is a way, you know, there is a battle for this, but we're not here to teach and... And it's we can't afford to get into those things at this moment, but we will be talking about a lot of that a little and soon, hopefully in the near future, when we feel a little more comfortable to be able to do that.
Right.
But also, definitely, you get on the other side, you can go back out after your property, because they robbed your property. If they took it for property taxes, look at. Let's just ask ourselves the question. You know, the ultimate right is the right of property. It starts off with the property of your body. That this is your first piece of property, and anything you accumulate in life is your property, and so in order for them to take that property away from you, okay, they can't just come in and say, well, you didn't pay your property taxes. Because then you never really owned your property, did you? You're paying slave tax, or you're paying someone to be able to have the right to that property. It's just unlawful. It can't be done. So the whole thing is robbery. It's a major problem. They're going to have a big problem on the other side of this thing. I don't know how they're going to settle all these problems. You know?
Okay,
at least we can get things straight.
Yeah, you were talking about the fiduciary authority, and the other one was the notice of claim that they did not provide. One was Form 56, and what was the other one, 4290?
4490. Yeah, if you just put that in, you put Form 56 or Form 4490 in your Google box, and you'll find it right away. You'll get that federal form will show right up. You get a copy of it right then.
Excellent.
I'm doing a case right now with someone on exactly this issue, what you're talking about.
Okay, good, because I'm going to go back
after. We'll let everybody know how that comes out as time goes on. So.
Excellent. Very good. Okay, well, I yield, give somebody else the floor. Thank you very much, John. I appreciate it. God bless you guys. Doing a great job, man. Okay.
Thank you.
Later. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we have one other person in the queue here, Doug from Colorado. Did you have a question for Ali or someone, or do you have a general question?
Yeah, this is Doug in Colorado. It's a general question. I'm guessing most of us have heard by now that Sheriff Joe Arpaio from Mariposa County, Arizona, came out a few days ago with the results of his five-year investigation into Obama's birth certificate. It's an amazing story, but without going into all of that, what I heard was that, well, they said, the chief investigator said that they were exposing it. They did a press conference on it, and their next step was turning it over to federal authorities, and I almost fell out of my chair laughing, like the federal authorities are going to do something with that. But my next thought was, would this be something that NLA should take a hold of?
We might get involved with something like that a little later. I think the first order of business is seeing how friendly or unfriendly this new administration is.
Sure.
It's going to make a world of difference. We've
right.
got a kind of an open line to him through an individual. So we'll see how that pans out. I know he's had meetings with different people. Hopefully he'll have a meeting with us. We've given him a lot of paper, a lot of information, and look at, he's not an uneducated man, you know, so he'll read through this stuff. He doesn't know the law necessarily. He might know some things, but he really doesn't know the Constitution. You can tell that by listening to him, you know, but anybody in the office doesn't seem to know it anyway. But I think he's willing to listen and learn, and I think we've given him enough information and enough proof of the fact of what the law really is. There's a consistency between our paper, and it's huge, and it all rests not only in the words of that document, but it rests also in the words of our founding fathers in communications between each other and the federal, Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, you know, all that together, and Supreme Court rulings and American jurisprudence. I mean, it's all harmonious, and that is the law of the land. And so I think he'll see that. And hopefully he'll grow with that and become a real lawful president to bring the law back. Look, at all a president has to do to really help solve the problems of this nation, he needs the vehicle to make it work, and that's where National Liberty Alliance comes in to create that vehicle, which is the people through grand juries across the nation, properly orientated in the common law. That's all that's necessary. That's here. That's available. And he could push it from his bully pulpit. He can really push it hard and in no time return this nation back to the law of the land again. If he doesn't push hard on that level, but at least gives us some support, and he's not out there using his federal agencies to abuse people, and he's preventing that from happening. We made that point in his paper. You know, his federal agencies are going to be as lawful as he is. If they're unlawful, he's unlawful. If they're lawful, he's lawful. And that's the point we tried to make in his paperwork. So, you know, as long as he at least reasonably backs us, and doesn't permit law-breaking in his federal agencies, we can accomplish this without his bully pulpit. But his bully pulpit surely would help.
Yeah, I'd also like to interject that this is kind of a personal thing, I guess, but it's becoming so evident to me what a spiritual battle this is more so than a political or legal or other battle. And I'd just like to encourage all the believers out there to get on your knees and implore the creator of the universe to set things right. And I believe he will. We're at that point in history that has never occurred before. The opportunities are limitless. Like you say, if Trump is the man he says he is, but then again, apart from God's protection, if he's the man he says he is, he's a dead man. So here we are.
Right. Well, that's absolutely true. We're standing at the brink, and I mean that in many, many ways. But particularly here, we're standing at the brink of justice or injustice, and it ultimately has to be God's power in this. We the people aren't capable of really winning over the forces we're up against. It's just not possible. So it's going to require an act of God to do it. I've always believed that from the very beginning. And I believe that more and more, of course, as days go by. And it's up to him to win this battle. It's all up to us just to do the right thing. That's the only job we have to do, the right thing. And people need to become educated. That's the key to success here in a republic like we have. You know, that's the key to success. All right. Anything else?
That's it. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Take our next person. Terry from New Jersey. Go right ahead.
I was wondering, what's the next step in this process, especially with regard to habeas corpuses? You might still have people rotting away in jail. Are you going to subpoena the violators, like the judges and prosecutors, or just wiping their asses?
Well, absolutely. That's part of what everything we've been doing in the past had a purpose, okay? Habeas corpus has had a purpose. I wish we could have done more. Any paper that we filed all had a purpose to lead to this point, to enter into a court case. We kind of always knew it's going to be really hard to get into the court, courtroom. But we realized that, okay, if we don't get into the courtroom, the way we should, which would be just really filing the papers and going in, then what we'll do is we'll create our own case. And that's what we've done here in New York. And we filed redress of grievances against all three branches of government and also information. We brought in all the governors to really get them to see and understand what's going on so we can copy them the papers that we're doing here. And for them to understand... look, the state's got to be somewhat frustrated unless the governor himself is really in the game with them, and of course the Congress, the state Congresses, and the Senate and the Congress, or the representatives, unless they're all in the game, a lot of states have been complaining, more than half of them, about what's going on in Washington. They're not happy with it, but they feel their hands are tied. They can't do anything. Why are their hands tied? Why can't they do anything? I thought the states had power. I thought they were sovereign. What's going on here? What prevented them from being able to do anything? Well, it was the 17th Amendment prevented them from doing anything. They have no say in the federal government. They have no trump card. They have no voice. They're not heard. They're not sovereign. The United States is brought together by the states. Ultimately, we the people declared, the liberty and the Declaration of Independence and set forth the rules of government. And we, the people, of course, have a huge say by consenting to both these governments, both state and federal. So we do that by consent, and we do that in two places, the committee man process, which has been robbed from us. We don't have power there. And the jury box, which includes also the grand jury, which has been robbed from us. We don't have any power or authority there. So we have no way to consent, and that's why we're fighting this battle to take that consent back. And also to give the power back to the states, where the states will start to step up and say, no, we're not doing this no more. Because, you see, they can stop everything in government if they have control, if that's what they want to do, if they have control of their senators in Washington. But right now they don't. So that's a problem. There was another part to this question. I forget what exactly were you asking, because I know there was something
else. Well, no, I was just wondering about the subpoenas.
Let's go back to that. Habeas corpus. We went through all the way down to filing a contempt of court with opportunity to amend. And that's where most of these habeas corpus, there's a few more we still have to get out, but that's where most of these habeas corpus sit, right there. They're not moving anywhere anymore. And they think that they've had the final hand, that they will suppress it and so on and so forth. But they haven't seen what the next step for us is, which is filing a show cause by what authority they think they had to refuse a due process to people. Look at this habeas corpus is just a statutory process of our right to due process. That's all it is. We have an unalienable right of due process. And if we have to put a statue in, and that's what they did a long time ago, I think it was back in the 1500s or 1600s, they kind of put the statue in and sort of makes it clear that, and that the habeas corpus is the right to face your accuser. Now, we really didn't need it because we have the Constitution, we have the Bill of Rights, and it's in the Bill of Rights. But since, but it does come with the common law court, so it's in there. They can't turn around and say, well, we rejected, we have the opportunity to accept or deny, which they don't. They don't. They do not have that. And besides that, we approved it for them anyway. And that's what really, kind of twisted them up a little bit. But they don't have the right to deny a habeas corpus because what they're saying, if they're that dumb and they don't understand it, we're going to have to teach it to them. It means that you're denying due process. You're saying that men don't have the right to due process. They're going to have to answer to that. So we're going to have them answer in this court right here. Just as much as we're having Congress answer in this court, we're having the United States Supreme Court answer in this court, and also the administration. And the administration hasn't been in office yet that we're focusing in on. So we're going to give them a little time. Let's see what he has to say at his inauguration, see if he makes any statements that would be beneficial to us to say, hey, wow, he's listening. We'll see what he does in his first 30, 60, 90 days in office. And we made that point. We're going to watch those things. And if he's not doing the right thing, then he's going to have to deal with us. I mean, we did it politely and nicely and with respect, but nevertheless, we're expecting him to obey the law. And I think we have a good chance at that because he's not a politician, but we do know the pressures will be on the other side. We know how these evil bastards work, so we know that they're going to try to do evil things. And I think he's kind of ready for that. He's not naive, Anyway. That's it, Terry?
Yeah, I just love to see their faces when the subpoenas hit their desks.
Yep, me too. Well, hopefully we'll see him in court.
Okay.
Okay, next, Jeremiah from California. You got the mic. California, Jeremiah. Last call for Jeremiah from California.
Hey, what's up? How are you? Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Oh, great. Well, hello, everyone, and Merry Christmas. And I hope that...
Merry Christmas. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to say, because the will of the living God is with the avoidance of a black hole by the use of an intellectual, tricks and traps are with the claim of the path of knowledge. So be very careful of it. Anyway, some correct sentence structure to start it off. But I was really going to ask you a question about the administrative agencies. You know how municipalities are formed, how they basically you can get something established by the legislature or it can be chartered, okay? And so my question is, let's say a municipality is not created by the legislature but instead is created by a charter, right? Would that mean that those agencies that come out, they're state agencies because they have to, they act as the arm of the state still. But then is that why there is an administrative, procedures checklist before you can get judicial review? It's because these municipalities who are under the charters, not the ones created by legislature, are actually administrative agencies as arms of the state. Is that?
Well,
and I have a follow-up.
Look, when you go into the courts to deal with these things, to go after the, municipalities, okay? Because I remember going into court, and the first thing the guy on the other side said is, who was it? It was a state. New York State Attorney General and one of his representatives, and told the judge we didn't get permission or something, and I told him we don't need permission, we're the people, we're coming in from a different process under common law, and so on and so forth. The judge kind of let that go. He didn't press their side, and he really was giving us a lot on our side, made it look like he was on our side, and everybody felt comfortable. It was, of course, too comfortable because he did all his dirty deed later on after we left the court. Then he wrote all his dirty stuff. But he didn't do anything in public dirty and bad. As a matter of fact, he held our paperwork up when the lawyer on the other side made a complaint saying that they didn't get the paper. They didn't understand what the paper really meant, and then the form wasn't done right or something like that. And he says, look, I assure you, the form was correctly done, not the way you usually see it, but it was properly done. And he ruled against her in the fact that she was trying to get more time when she was well past her time. So, again, he was very friendly to us, but that was in the courtroom. And he made his decisions outside when we all went home and left, and he made some decisions and then threw everything out. So he played both sides.
Okay.
And that's what you get. But he didn't go up against us with the municipality part either. Now, the municipality part is a corporation. It has nothing to do with common law. Look, our government doesn't belong to be a corporation. Why would it be a corporation? It's a trust. And yeah, it should have a charter. It's a trust with a charter. It belongs to the people. And it's a trust. I can't think of anything else to call it. And all of the governments, whether it be a town or a village or a city or a county or a state or a federal, all those governments are trusts. Ben.
I wanted to interject and say that I think that the local communities can get together and form, they can form a chartered city or county at their own, expense, and then they can, pretty much let the state know that they did that if there's enough people getting together to do that. That's the power of the people. But I was just reading that the APA fails to define the term court. Can you speak to that for a moment, please? And I want to say
sorry,
hello
to
money.
I was distracted. Can you repeat that?
Sure. No problem. Thanks for bringing me back in. I want to also just say hello to Money Mike. I think I heard Money Mike on the call earlier. A little different voice, but still sounds like money. The APA fails to define the term court. Will you speak to that for a moment?
Now, the APA, meaning?
The Administrative Procedures Act. Federal Administrative Procedures Act.
And they fail to what?
Define. So it's always been clear that a court is not an administrative agency, right?
Correct.
So to know this, it's pretty useful, but the APA fails to actually define what a court is, you guys. And they say that the difference...
Because every court...
Sorry, one moment. Let me mute myself out.
Yeah, every court out there is acting as an administrative court. Every single one of them. None of them are acting as courts of justice. And they're really courts of statutes, ultimately, which brings them again back to administrative. If they're going to operate under statutes, as a matter of fact, the Supreme Court has already said, if the court has the name criminal in front of it, then it's not a court of law. It has nothing to do with common law. It has no power. It's an administrative process. It has no power to fine or incarcerate. Well, that's what the Supreme Court says, and that's the truth. The problem is the people don't know it, and they're not educated, and therefore they believe what they're told. Reality is the way one perceives it, isn't it? And the people of the United States perceive reality to be one way when it's really fantasy. The reality to them is the fantasy, and they don't know it. Because why? They rob them of their education. That's why. It's the only reason. Educate the people. Let them know what's going on. And then believe me, it'll be a whole new...
Right. So what we have to, I think what we have to look out for, and I'll close with this if there's other questions, but I mean, I could always go on, but I think we have to look out for these words of art game. When these administrative agencies are calling themselves courts, because you remember that courts are very much independent. I mean, that's what they're endowed with in legal theory. Okay. And that these administrative agencies are bound so much by rules, okay, really lets you know that they affect a completely separate class of person from the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, here in the United States, courts of law and equity both fall under the common law. Equity finds it in American jurisprudence. Courts of law find it in the Constitution and the laws of the United States, the lawful laws of the United States, that is, that which we've given authority to make and create. And you'll find that out, of course, In our legislative powers that we gave them, what is it, 19 or 18? I think it's 19 legislative powers. And inside those legislative powers, you know, they have the right to make war under certain parts of that. And that's the only thing that's there. That's it. Anything outside of that is null and void. It's irrelevant, and it plays no role in where we're at. And so if it's an administrative court, and again, criminal courts, all criminal courts are administrative courts. All town courts are administrative courts.
Is that
all
the same
city
as quasi,
courts are administrative courts with
you
the exception
say
of New York City.
Is it quasi-court, though? Is like, in other words, it's not a real court. It's a quasi-court, right?
Well, ultimately, its jurisdiction's unknown because they make everything up as they go. It changes from town to town, from village to village, and it changes from even in the state courts. You know, if you have a county court,
right.
Which is running under the here in New York. New York, we have two courts. Hold on. Here in New York, we have two courts on the county level. We have the county court, and then we have the New York Supreme Court in the county of whatever county it is. Every county has a Supreme Court in it. And so those courts, they're supposed to be courts of record, okay, those two courts, the county court and the Supreme Court. But neither of them act as the court of record. They're operating under the rules of they're not operating under the rules of common law, and they are administrative, and they will separate, they'll call it, you're coming into the civil side or to the criminal side, you know. They make a separation, and again, any court that calls themselves a criminal court is an administrative court. It's not a court of record.
Right.
It's a power of finer.
Okay. That makes sense. It does make sense. Yeah. Now I'm going to close with this. I'm really going to be gone after this. I got 2% on my phone. But
maybe what
know,
they really mean when they say criminal court is that it's filled with a lot of criminals that make the rulings up there.
That's what I'm thinking. That's hilarious. Just remember this, you guys, that rulemaking, okay, when it comes to administrative proceedings, let's say they take you into court, right, and it's administrative and you know it, right? Well, the bottom line is if they're sitting there making rules and basing it on, and they're making their decisions based on some sort of like administrative precedent, right? Well, that applies to a specific class of person. Okay? Now delineate, figure out which class of person you are and make the correct claim. Because certainly those things are actually, they have remedies. You can remedy your situation if you're being thrown into a class of persons that you're not a part of. You know, that's really what freedom is about in this country as well. I mean, it's a country of freedom, and so therefore it can exist with classes of persons. There's nothing wrong with class of persons, and sometimes you need that, right? So you can have, you know, protection for the people who need it the most, you know. But for those that don't, know who you are, you know, make the correct claim, and have a Merry Christmas. Thank you, guys.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and by the way, if anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 to get into the queue. Okay, let's take our next caller. It is David. What state you from, David?
Missouri.
Go right ahead. You got the mic.
All right, John. Thanks for taking the call here. I want to preface the question with the fact that this is not meant to be divisive. I'm new to NLA. About a month now, so I've been trying to not only research all the information that's on the site, but also just do some independent research in and of myself. And because the whole idea of common law grand juries was just so foreign to me before I came across NLA, I did a Google search one day on it. And interestingly enough, and I know you're already aware of this, John, there's several other groups or organizations that claim to also have the same goal of reincorporating or reinstituting common law grand juries. One of the biggest detractors, I guess, to NLA, I want you to touch on your comments on the basis of this person's accusations as to why NLA's common law grand jury efforts are doomed to fail. That's where my question's getting at here. Bear with me, please. But, you know, this Anna Von Reitz, I'm sure you know who she is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I've seen some accusations she's made about you and some of the replies as well. And again, this isn't meant to be divisive. I honestly just want to know the truth. She says that by definition what we're trying to do here is not going to work because we're trying to work within these administrative type courts. And it's interesting how some of your previous conversations have played a lot into some of her reasoning, how we're trying to declare ourselves as common law citizens without you know, addressing our citizenship status properly, which, you know, the previous caller also just touched on that at the tail end of his call. But I'm going to shut up for a minute and let you address this. Basically, my question is this. What is the difference between what she and groups that agree with her agree it is constituted an actual common law grand jury? Do we actually need to go outside the system and form a completely different government, or do we need to keep doing it the way NLA is doing it? And why is NLA right and they're wrong, per se? And again, I'm not trying to pit you against all these other groups out there. I wish we could all come together and work together, but I'll let you I yield the floor. Thank you for answering my question.
Right. Okay. Yeah, well, bear in mind, we've been around a lot longer than they have and she has as far as dealing with the grand juries and coming into the process. We know quite a few different things about her. She has some connection in some other places. We're not going to get too deep into that at all, but that she shouldn't have been involved with, but she was. She kind of came out of left field from Canada and came in like a firestorm. All of a sudden, her name appeared like everywhere, so she had some kind of a way to get herself out there. It took NLA years to really get to the point where we have, name recognition. She gained name recognition very quickly, and that always questioned, you know, got to question that very quickly. She also got a pretty big following, and she hooked on, and I don't know how much she was involved in the background, and maybe she was involved in the background of this movement before, and then finally it came out, or she just hooked on to these people. But there's a group of people, we've been approached by this already, that want to form a shadow government or quasi-government or whatever you want to call it. And they wanted us to become involved, and they were talking about us taking in the position of putting together the grand juries across the nation, coming in working with them. They were electing by really ultimately by just making statements to become judges and to be people taking positions of governors of different states and all kinds of different positions. They even had a president of the United States. I don't know if this guy's still involved with them, but there was a guy that had that position. There was quite a few judges, self-appointed judges. She's a self-appointed judge. We didn't know whether she was a real judge or not for the longest time. Couldn't figure it out. And we couldn't find her to ask her. But anyway, it's a whole new thing. Now, when they came out and asked us to participate with us, what they were asking us is to participate with subversion against the United States of America. And that is just clear, that if we went in with that, we'd be participating with subversion, overthrowing of the government. Okay. Now, the government we have, there's nothing wrong with the government we have. The problem is the people who are running in our government, the tyrants involved. And not everyone in the government is a tyrant. A lot of them are just ignorant people, and they're not even sure which way to go. And their heart, some of their hearts are torn. They have to go this way because this is what they were taught was right, but they know what's right on the other side, and they're torn between two places. But it's the tyrants that's taken them the wrong way. We kind of agree with Bill Thornton, and that is to educate people. And over the process of time, education will change people when people come to realize the error of their way kind of thinking. But anyway, look, we own these buildings. These are federal buildings. We built them. We paid for them. We owned everything in those buildings. We pay the electric. We pay the salaries of all those people. Those are our courts. We're going to go into our courts and use our courts. And we're going to demand the process and the procedure of the law. And we do it quite differently than anyone else has ever done it. We're not lawyers, so they can't really take our bar licenses away. We're coming at them. They can't answer our questions, so they remain silent constantly. Silence is fraud. The Supreme Court has ruled that numerous times. Even common law makes the point it's fraud. When you have a duty to speak, it's fraud. It's in American jurisprudence. Okay? So a lot of these people have just been quiet. Now, we haven't been in a position to really being to press this in any way because we've been filing papers in the court and they've been rejecting them. We've been putting out informations and we haven't been doing anything other than filing informations and mandamuses, commanding them to obey the law, revealing subversion against the United States of America and all these things. We spent a year, a little over a year and a half now since we started, but we spent a year filing papers in all 94 federal courts. Every elected official on a federal level and on the state levels within have copies of our papers. We fax out to everybody. So, you know, the legislative body, the administrative body, and also the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, they have a copy, everything we've been doing. on the state level is the same thing. The legislative bodies, the governor, they have a copy. We fax them all the same thing. They're aware of what's going on, and none of them have anything to say, okay? And that's okay. None of them were forced to say anything. They, by law, ultimately, they should have said something, because we're talking about subversion against the United States of America by enemies both foreign and domestic from within our government, and kind of revealing some of them to a certain degree, and yet nobody says anything. From that standpoint, they're guilty as sin, because they had a duty to speak and they didn't. As far as from their court position, well, we didn't do the paperwork this way, we don't have a number that way, you know, worry about it. You know, so from that position, they had a different position, and that's okay. Look, at while we were doing all, there was a reason for doing those things, and there was a reason why we couldn't do what we're doing today then, okay, earlier on. Because we spent a couple of years working through the whole United States, taking out clippings, you know, for press releases in every single county in America, okay? I mean, there's a rural counties that we didn't go to, like in Alaska and stuff, you know. Nobody's there, maybe three people, you know. Nothing there. But generally speaking, about 3,000 counties, we have taken out, you know, news, you know, clippings, what do you call it, press releases.
Press
talking
release,
about
right.
The fact that we're bringing in, bringing back the common law grand jury, wanting people to come in, see what it was about, and give us their thoughts, their opinion, yay or nay. And pretty much it was unanimous across the board. Every once in a while you get a troublemaker, but what's one or two people? But we're not here by population anyway. Even if we had 30 people at a meeting and 29 said no and one said yeah, guess what? We're a republic. We get it anyway. But nevertheless, it was pretty much unanimous across the nation. So we've been doing, in that process, what were we doing? We were going after the people. We visited everywhere in the county, in every county in the state. Sometimes we do, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 counties out of one county and invite people, but we took out the press releases. Here in New York, we went to almost every one of the counties, but we were counties, we'd get the borders together, 3 counties on a border to collect it, and we'll do 3 counties at a shot. But generally speaking, we went out to the people. What were we busy doing? We're out there getting name recognition. We're out there getting out the word of what it is we're doing. We're building our membership. I remember when we got 100 people, we got 1,000 people. Now we're hitting the 6,000 mark. I remember watching the ratings going up and up and up. The what do they call that? The Alicia, what's the name of those ratings, Gerard? I heard Gerard's voice in here. The Alicia, I think it is. Alicia ratings. You know, we get the tens of thousands of new people every month visiting our site. So we get a lot of people that are hitting our site. We have name recognition. Now we've got we're organized in every state. We formed in every single state. We formed a unified state common law grand jury, real people, individuals in that state. They got their own seal. They got an address, okay, a location where you can send mail to, and they got membership in each one of those states. I mean, New York, I think we're up to 400 members, maybe more, just in New York State.
Can I ask you to go onto our website.
And click up on our website, and you'll see each one of the states, how many members each state has. But the point is, we have county organizers, we have state coordinators, state organizers, we have national coordinators. And so we have a structure. And now National Liberty Alliance is all about facilitating an education, organizing, and communicating for the people to build the common law grand juries, to build the administrations for the common law grand juries at the grassroots level, totally on their own. Nope, we don't tell anybody what to do on that level once they get the education and get into the court system. But they have to go through an education. We set up that educational process. We're writing a book on how things work and sort of, you know, a book that will give people the understanding of what they have to do here or there and how things work and how to orientate the juries and so on. So we have, and this is grassroots, this is real grassroots, and working in the system. And we're banging on the court doors saying, This is our court. This belongs to we, the people. We paid the bills. And more than that, we're a republic. And here's the Constitution. And here's the Bill of Rights, which is part of that Constitution. And you guys ain't keeping it. And we're just going to keep going and going and going and going and going and pressure and pressure and pressure. And pressure is what's going to win us, especially when we get that really that big push with enough people behind us. We hit that critical mass. I think we're approaching it very closely. We now have a friend, we think, we're going to see in a couple of months. We have a friend in the White House. We'll know. When he gets in there, we'll know. And if he's working with us, he'll, just the fact that he'll be working with us, hopefully he will. You know, we're going to find out. And if he does, you know, tip his hat to us a few times here and there and make a few words here or there, that's going to bring up a popularity, too, and it's going to move us. So well, we're inside Johnny, the system. This is our government. We want it back. We want to get the tyrants and either get them out of office and put them in jail.
Yeah, see, that seems, and thank you for your reply, but that seems to be the whole point of contention with these other groups and our NLA philosophy is we're not, we shouldn't be working within the system of government. We need to go back to the real original constitutional government, which is that which was under the Articles of Confederation, or at least prior to the Congress that was in operation prior to the Civil War. And I mean, you know all the theories that are thrown out there about, you know, the NLA is doomed to failure because we're trying to work within a corrupted maritime type jurisdiction, and we're operating within their jurisdiction, so we're going to keep butting our head up against the wall because they're going to constantly.
Again, we're not in their jurisdiction. Hold on 1 minute, Gerard. I'll let you go next. We're not in their jurisdiction at all. We make that clear. As a matter of fact, if you go look up on our paperwork, the first paper you see and we filed in the court was the jurisdiction paper. That comes out of their rules, okay? And we made clear what our jurisdiction is. There's okay. No fussing around.
What he wants to know is the fundamental differences between her and us. Look, the first time we read Anna von Ritz's stuff, she had some good stuff. That's how she sells her stuff, because she has some valid stuff. Absolutely. We actually quoted her, okay?
I know you did.
Look, just like the devil wraps truth with lies, that's what Anna von Ritz does. Look, she gives too much credibility to the fiction, and she's claiming that we're working with the fiction. What we're saying is that fiction is fraud. We understand the Judiciary Act and what it did, and that Marbury versus Madison got a lot of it back. But when you come home and you find the children all over the house doing what you're not supposed to be doing, you don't build a new house and leave them there and say, well, I'm leaving. No, you put the kids back where they belong and you take over. That's us. We the people. This is our system. Those are our courts. She thinks if you have a voter registration or a driver's license and all this stuff, that makes you a U.S. citizen under their rules and all this magic crap that doesn't because it's fraud. And she's giving it credibility is what she's doing. And so what we say is, no, look, that was a fraud when you did it. It's still a fraud. When we go into court, we rebut any presumptions that they might have of who we are, and that's what the other guy was talking about, know who you are. We know who we are. That's why we open a court of record up under those laws that this nation was founded on. Look, I will meet anybody in a real court of law that the Constitution is the measuring stick, and we will kick their butt. But you can't say just because the system – is corrupt that we can't that we don't have a right to turn that system around or use it. Look, at all we need to do is implement those things that are already there. There's nothing.
You're
wrong
actually
with
answering my question. I appreciate this, John. Nothing against you, but I think Gerard is addressing a little bit deeper. Exactly. I wanted you guys to say this is what's wrong with that position and those people that hold that kind of position, and this is why NLA is heading within the right path, and this is why we're convicted
so
that we are heading
down
the right path.
They've found methods around to start this new thing up, and one of them was there's a law in the postal system and you could be sworn in as some kind of judge. Maybe they did it on the frontier or whatever it is. But in the meantime, they got all these marshals and governors or whatever that they're swearing into, and they're calling themselves judge this and captain that and all this stuff.
Right.
And at one point, you know, it becomes bad because all of a sudden somebody wants to go do an arrest. Where are you going to bring them? Oh, we're going to fight the marshals. Yeah, you and your 200 people, you're going to bring them down to the base of Denny's. I mean, what the hell are you talking about? You know
right.
what I'm saying? I mean,
right.
So there's a good thing in the beginning, and then it morphs into this craziness over here. And it's
is one
dangerous.
Other thing.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, there's one other thing I'd like to add on this. You know, for a while, when we started to become popular, when our numbers were started growing and states were being climbing, I remember when we got the first state put together and agreed on the common law grand jury, which was New York, okay, and we called it being constituted. And then we got a second state and a third state. It took a while. It took a year maybe to get through all the states, get all 50 states. Remember, this whole process was all realized to be done this way, to get people people busy, get them educated, get them involved in order to build membership, to get the people together. You got to have the people behind you. If you're going to go out and say that we are the people, then you got to be the people. You can't be just from New York or from Jersey. No, you got to be from every state in the union. And you have to be organized in such a way and focused and resting on the same thing. And that's what we built, and that's what we put together. Now, a couple of things. I learned early on that every time something good comes up, that people get together and put something, a good organization or anything up there, the enemy has a way of coming in, and they infiltrate, and they take over, and they turn it into all different direction, and they make it benefit them. Even though they're bringing the people in from one position, they're really doing something else. Every single institution has been corrupted. Every American institution has been corrupted that way, including our government. And that's how they operated. And we knew that this was going to be a problem at some point in time that we'd have to really pray on and be careful of. We got calls from the Vatican wanted to fund us. We got calls from generals and different people, all different kinds of people, wanted to be our friends and our partners. We denied every one of them. Denied, we don't want you. That's not what we are. It's not what we're doing. We're just facilitators here. You go. One of the people. Be one of the people and get involved. You're not coming in as a general. We're not coming in as the Pope or whatever. We didn't get a call from the Pope, of course. But we got a call from the Vatican, okay? And we've had other people coming in.
For the Pope.
We had other people coming secretary. In.
You're right. I heard about that.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring that up. But we had other people coming in.
Money Charles.
We had other people coming in, and then they were starting to steal. One guy stole our membership. He said, "Oh, you can trust me, John." And I realized what he was doing, you know. And I had been here before, so, you know, it wasn't easy to fool me. But this guy got me. I thought he was one of the – I realized, okay, we cut him off. And he's been advertising to a percentage of our people. He still does. I haven't heard from him in a while. I'm not going to bring up any names. Then we got a call from other people. Then they came together as a pressure, and they told me that I had to step down and as leadership of NLA, and that they had taken a vote. This is Anna von Ritz and all these and a bunch of names, which I'm not going to mention, at least a half a dozen. They gave me a call, and they told me I had to step down from NLA, that they were going to take over, and that I wasn't doing the right thing for the people, and I should do the right thing and step aside. You know, that's another game they played. Then they gave it a call, okay, and they said they were ready to arrest some judges, and they wanted us to bring in the grand jury and participate with them on the thing. And that's when I realized, wow, these people, this is a setup. Do you think I'd be walking free today if I went along with them back then? I'd be in jail right now. Because they'd love to get me in jail because they want to get me for subversion, but I'm not subverting. There's nothing I'm due that would be a subversion against the United States. I lift up the United States. I lift up the government. I lift up the law of the land, the Bill of Rights, the rulings of the Constitution, the Founding Fathers, all of the great, great works that they've done. I lift it all up, and we just talk about the tyrants who are really destroying all that, and those people need to go to jail. They need to be put out of office, and a lot of them need to go to jail. And that's a whole different way that we're working this thing than what they were doing. And that's exactly one of the things we mentioned to them. What are you going to do? You're going to try them in the back room of Denny's, and whose basement are you going to keep them in? You know, where are you going to put the prison? You know, and then you want me to participate by getting people, our membership, to come in to sit as a grand jury and a trial jury and make decisions on this? Boy, if anything is subversion, that's subversion. And that's what these people were doing. Remember, every movement out there is really what they're trying to do is copy us to begin with. They're trying to subvert what we're doing. They're trying to say that this is the wrong way. You got to do it this way. And we really don't get involved in the bickering back and forth. As a matter of fact, NLA only officially answered one letter and then let it go. I didn't even want to do that, but the leadership that we put together here, the national leadership, all put the pressure and said we should answer her. And I said, okay, we'll answer her one time. Because I agree with Jefferson. Jefferson says don't feed the fuel, don't feed the fire. You know, especially if the people are responding and they attack you, and the more you go back, it fuels the fire, gives them more attention, more of a platform, and more of an attack on you. Because they got more words to attack also. They'll twist more words. And he just ignored his enemies and let them say what they want and just went on and did the right thing. And he was a very, very popular president because people knew and trusted. And when they met Jefferson, they thought they were going to meet a monster. And they discovered what a great guy this guy was. Okay? So anyway, we've responded one time officially, and that's it. And we don't respond no more. But we don't run away from it in open forums if people ask. We usually don't give names. I didn't give any names. We didn't give any details that, you know, we just don't want to give them fuel for their fire.
No, and I appreciate you guys taking the time to answer this.
We didn't give any details that are not listed out there, and we even held some of those back. It's all online. It's all there to be read.
Exactly, and I did some research before I asked you guys these questions. I mean, I'm not trying to get you guys to admit something or say something that's not common knowledge. And if anything you don't want to talk about, that's fine. Here's my come to. If I'm confused about this, and there's questions as to what's misinformation, what's disinformation, where should we be coming from, and then my question also probably represents several other people's same questions. So hopefully somebody else got a benefit out of both of you answering my question. And you guys definitely gave me my money's worth on the call. I really appreciate your time on it.
Well, you know, we agree with you on that because
6-8 months.
we agree with you on that because healthy conversation on any subject, we run away from nothing. We'll answer any question anybody has about anything concerning what we're doing. And so it's very important that we do that. We answer it as honestly as we can. And if you keep an eye or an ear on us and you see what's going on out there, whatever we did put out there and what we're doing here, you'll find consistently the same thing over and over again. So as long as we're consistent, okay, and honest, it'll eventually be seen. Look, the truth will eventually be known if you listen long enough, okay? And that's the key. Listen, who is it that's attacking who? NLA attacks nobody, never has, never will. Responded one time, step by step, point by point, to one issue, you know, that was put out there by Anna von Rich. So we responded that one time, and it was point by point. But we're not going to go bickering back and forth. We're not going to tell everybody how terrible those people are or anything. But the truth will be given in an open forum like this when it's necessary. Again, with minimum mentions of what names of people. We don't want to do that because then that just gets us into another problem.
I would like to say that she's absolutely right about the government's operation and what they're doing and how they're a fraud. She's absolutely right. There's no lie in that. I mean, they're doing unconstitutional things. They're passing laws that are not laws that need to be annulled. We don't even need to repeal most of these laws. They just need to be nullified, and hence the grand jury and the juries. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
That's the prescription that our forefathers gave us to get the people in there to make the decisions and watch the government. That's the prescription. Now, you know, how do you do that? You got to do it from when inside their building. We have to go in. We have to take over based on, we have the law on our side, and we know the law, and we will teach them the law in the court if we have to. And that's our goal. And the people will do it because, people understand common sense. And so when you do common sense, truth will prevail as long as somebody proclaims it. So if you go out there and you proclaim the truth and you work in common law and you work in common sense, the people are going to right away say, yeah, I like that. And that's what's happening. People are wakening up. And there's a lot that's wrong with this system. And she's absolutely right with a lot of the stuff she says. We agree. We agree that they don't have any authority.
We thought she was a judge. We thought she was a real judge.
Right.
How long? 6 months to find out whether, because we kept looking for her.
Look at her and her people. When we get in and we do the common law grand jury the way we want to do it, they will work in that system fine because they understand the fraud. You see, they have a big, U.S. versus Williams was so good for us. Where when he revealed that, it is the people, and it's up to them, and they're separated, and they can't tell us how to do it, and we're separate from them. Would the potter make a pot that can tell it what to do? In every, you know what I'm saying? I mean, that's what they want us to believe, that we're too stupid to run ourselves in our juries and our grand juries, which is where we consent or deconsent to them. Based on that, because the people have the final word, and they're trying to kill that every day. They're subverting that, And just because they have something written on a piece of paper, or just because legislation was put in and the legislators passed it, and even if it's a popular vote, I don't care. If it's unconstitutional and it's and it goes against that fundamental principle, it's wrong. It's wrong if everybody wants to do it. We don't have mob rule in this country. If they decide that we should kill every third born child, I don't care how many people vote for that. You can't make it right.
Right.
That's why we're a nation of laws. And it's up to us, the people, to make sure that we stick to that. You know, we let them dictate to us far too long, you know. And we're supposed to be running this thing, not them, because we can't.
Let's move on to our next call. Thanks a lot, David. Appreciate the call.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Hopefully we'll hear from back here some more soon.
Thank you.
Okay, Gerard, you want to take over the panel? Gerard?
Yeah, I have to unmute myself. I'm slow these days.
Okay.
Let me see.
Why don't you take over the panel? I'll be in the back. Maybe I'll, you know, respond a little bit here or there. But I might go to sleep a little early tonight, but I'll be here for a while.
Don't you dare. Anyway. Dave was on there, so I got to hit the next guy, right? Okay, I got it.
No. Oh yeah, that's right.
Dave.
You were right.
So now it's Connecticut Crystal, right? You've been unmuted. How you doing, Crystal?
Oh, hanging in there. I've had.
How you doing, Crystal?
My sister died. My brother. My aunt. I just, you know. It's been overwhelming these past 6 weeks.
Sorry to hear that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I told you, I don't know if I gave you the copy of my deeds and everything, and that my house has been paid for. And so when I filed that, that bankruptcy, so all that stuff would be dismissed. Now the GE Credit Union said, they put on there, was the wrong address, what have you. And I asked them again for their proof of claim. Here's the, when I went to the court and I said, this is mortgage fraud. And I said, here's my deeds and everything. Everything's filed, volume and page and all that. And I believe I sent you the transcript. And when the... And I asked him, I said, am I a public servant? He said, no. I said, is this my grand jury? He said, no. I said, you have committed a treason. He goes, basically, this is his girl. He'll do as he pleases. And recently here, this other person, the marshal, changed the paperwork on a Saturday and put the people out of their house totally illegally. And we have the paperwork and everything, so I told us we better follow through with this. And come to find out, one of the politicians was involved with it also. But I mean, it's just so crazy, and it's just like where the attorneys, which I've been telling the everybody I've run into about, I said to get on that National Liberty Alliance and learn about your constitutional rights and laws. It's so crazy because all the attorneys are the debt collectors, and they are the ones that are making the laws. They make the laws, they break the laws, they set the laws, and I'm like, conflict of interest, it's just absolutely absurd.
It's really gotten bad. I understand. It's worse than people can even imagine, and that's why we need to get back in there, and that's why we have the prescription. And that's exactly what needs to start happening is they need to start answering this stuff in our paperwork, because we have put all this in, and they need to answer the people. You know, Robert Schultz filed a redress of grievance under the First Amendment that had never been tried before. And the question was: is do the people have the right to have to petition the government for redress of grievance? And he took it all the way up, and of course the ruling came back. What they said was, yes, the people have a right to petition for redress of grievance, but the government doesn't have to do anything, doesn't have to listen. Now, how many years ago was that? That's where they were at.
Well,
remember that was a contradiction to their own statements at an earlier time. When you have a duty to speak, it's fraud. And
right.
And of course, you know what Schultz had done. That was back in 2003 or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But another thing too, when Trump was here in our city several years ago, he was horrible and obnoxious then, and all the properties and the people was listening. When he also had mentioned, he loves when more or less people lose because that's when he makes all his investments, you know. And
Well, listen, they created a climate. This is look at these actors in the government that are making these laws, that are also investing in the fat of those laws by being able to get people's properties and stuff.
Right.
You know, they've always made money on properties, Crystal, always.
Exactly.
I took a class on tax sales and all that crap before they were actually doing it in such an illegal way. I didn't realize what was going on at the time. I mean, when I took the class, look, if they took your property for tax sale and they sold it at an auction, and they,
it's
let's
under,
say you owe $10,000. Let
right.
me finish. They would get $100,000, but you had a right to the difference. You had 30 days that you could claim it, and because the county and the government was not supposed to be in the property business. What's this business? You owe them taxes. Taxes are supposed to be able so they can run themselves, right? So then they take your property and they sell it, and they suck all the equity out and they put it in their pockets because they illegally convert the deed into their own name before they sell it, and they keep the whole thing. So this is extortion. This is all kinds of fraud going on, illegal conversions, no due process. They don't even do it in a court. They don't even notice you. You know, I mean, there hasn't been a worse time in history, a more tyrannical time than right now. You got to understand, we're way worse than we were when England was operating things. They've just perfected the fraud and the corruption. And so this is what we're up against. They don't follow their own rules, and there's nobody there making them do it. That's why we have to be able to indict, and we have to be able to put in those people that will run the trials and make sure that they're brought to justice. That they're not going to look at. They're controlling every end of this thing. They got their fingers in it. How could you ever expect the government to fix the government, to stick a finger in its eye and poke its eye out and pluck it? It's not
exactly
going to do it.
But also another people. Thing that people fail to realize too is when you see flip this house, that is the biggest Ponzi scheme of all. And that's why they say, oh, you can get a house for $5,000, what have you, because they're taking people's home for less than $500 or $1,000. All of the utility bills, every bill is a double bill. And when you see, like, generation, like on your light bill, on your water bill, they double it with this WPCA, which they match it equivalent to our water bill, and then they double tax it, which, for example, if you're paying units,
Look, I'm going to slow you down because I understand what they do. It's like going to Las Vegas, Crystal. It's stacked against you, okay? You can't beat the house. And that's what you know, they throw bones to the people and people get into the profit making, but ultimately the snake ends up eating the tail, and that's where we're at now. The snake is eating the tail, and they got the money thinned down so that they're going to have an economic crisis, and we have to figure that out. We have to figure out how we're going to get through that and how we're going to deal with each other and what kind of deals we're going to do and what kind of money we're going to have. We're at a very big crossroads right now. We only got like 4 other people in the queue, and it's getting late, so I want to move on. I understand what you're talking about, and I understand all the little nasty methods, but you know what? It's actually simpler than all that. I mean, we just have to get it back to the fundamental principles and not allow them to do that. And things will straighten out when you have the right rule in there. Then, like John says, I don't care if it's Hitler. As long as he's operating within the proper rules, he's going to do the right thing. Even a judge rules within the confines of the Constitution. If it's not within the confines of the Constitution, then it's by no authority. So, anyway.
And remember, Remember one other thing, though. Look, when you start to see that the judge, you can't control the judge and he's not behaving and he's not listening, then you have to get ready to make a federal case out of it. Me, I don't wait. I go to court one time. You give them one time to do the right thing, and now we're going to federal court. It's over with. They're not giving me my due process. They're not giving me my proper jurisdiction, and so on and so forth. So you got to go right to federal court because they're violating your unalienable rights. That makes it a federal.
So you suggest that I take it to the federal court.
If you feel at this point that it's starting to get out of control and you can no longer hold that judge back and you think he's going to take your property, yeah, I'd move real quick into the federal court. And you look at the two things you're suing these people for, okay? They're not giving you due process, number one. And then there's some crazy jurisdiction. They're in jurisdictions unknown. Can you please tell me what jurisdiction you're in? They refuse to tell me the jurisdiction. Can you tell the court here, the federal court, what jurisdiction you're in? They can't say the common law jurisdiction under the law. They can't say equity because both operate under common law. What are they going to say? They don't have an answer for those things. The other thing is they're also operating, if it's a tax thing, they're operating in rem. If it's a mortgage thing, they're still operating under the process of non-judiciary foreclosure, okay, which the tax things do the same thing, non-judiciary foreclosure.
But the funny thing is they put their name on my mortgage, and I said,
yeah.
Can I have a sworn notarized affidavit? When did I take it? Because my house has been paid for since 2011, okay? They have no proof, and then the only thing
they have to have fiduciary authority to do that. That's what you need to look for. Even though they're not the government, they still have to have fiduciary authority. When you get into the federal court, you're going to look at a number of things. First of all, you want to deal with the fact and not get away from the fact that this case is all about due process and violation of due process and taking me into courts with jurisdictions unknown. That's what it's all about. Okay, you win the case ultimately on the fact that they don't have a contract. They cannot produce a contract. They have no fiduciary authority over you. They have no proof of claim. Where's the sworn affidavits? There's nothing here. They never have any of those things. You're going to argue the case in the lower court. You don't want to argue that part of the case on the upper court. The upper court, you want them to squash them and shut that case down because they're not giving you due process. And then you don't have to argue the other parts of it.
Well, can I finish this? Okay,
because
I want to send you this paperwork, and I think this will help everybody. So what I did, I have my affidavits and everything. I got my volume page and all that. So the last name, volume and page and everything, it's all under my name. They can't do a daggone thing with this. You know, I said, here it goes right here. And you know what? It's just like they're all like backpedaling, and now the attorneys are like, well, you know, why don't you just give up your house and sell your house? You know, because you're
trying to take them to the federal court.
Yeah.
You
know, but I
want
to send you the
copy. You're going after all of them. Remember, you're going after them for conspiracy to take you into jurisdictions unknown. You're going to go after they work together, okay? The lawyer worked with the judge to do this to you.
And this judge, he is per diem, so he's over in Israel. He comes back whenever, and like you said before, so what? I'm retired. So he comes back per diem, and he's the one who's doing all this.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
have you been doing writs of error, overturning his ruling, things of that nature?
No, I don't know that.
Yeah, you could do that as the sovereign of the court. You're the only sovereign in the court. Remember, the judge is not the sovereign of the court. The lawyers on the other side, they don't even belong in that court. They're not the sovereign of the court. Okay? Your corporation is coming out of you. From what does a fiction have any kind of power or authority to go after, to sue a reality? How could that possibly happen? It can't. Okay? So it has to be an individual to an individual. So they have another problem there. Of course, in their court system that they've set up and the way the process they work with and so on, that's how they do things. But you bring this into the federal court. The other thing in the federal court, there's no way they're going to pull you into a REM process, but a lot of the rules of the federal court really talk a lot about the REM process. So you got to be careful on where you go with this. You want to keep this thing focused in on two things and two things only. that they have violated your unalienable right of due process by not giving you due process for taking your property. They've changed the name of the title of my property without my authority. Where is the due process?
Right.
I had no time to face my accusers. Okay, also they did this in jurisdictions unknown. I have no idea what laws they used to do this by. How did they do this? You see, that's all you want to argue in a federal court, nothing more.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Crystal. Thank you, John.
Okay, Crystal.
All right.
Okay, we're going to take the next question here. And it says, I don't know, Nick's D.
Yeah, hi. This is Curtis from Virginia.
Yeah. How are you doing, Curtis?
All right. I'm glad you all are there tonight and having some good conversations. Earlier, John was talking to some fellows and mentioned that we had a lot of shadow governments. And I was wanting to get him to clarify what he's referring to as the shadow government, because the way I see it is the Constitution before the Civil War is the real government, which came to an end after they assassinated Lincoln and he wasn't able to reinstate it.
Yeah, well,
and
that's the fiction.
It's been under a corporate martial law state ever since, and the constitutions of the states have been overthrown. And basically dormant. So our government is vacant
okay,
and dormant.
Okay, but that's if you accept the fiction there. If you want to accept the fiction as reality, then you accept it as reality. You
they
see,
did
we
that
go
with
back
no authority.
To the beginning. Yeah, we have to go back to the beginning. Remember, where did the United States begin? It began with a covenant with God. Okay, that's where it began. Go to the Declaration of Independence and read it. It was a covenant with God and saying to God, we want your unalienable rights. We want to live under your law and your rules, which is the law of the land today, which is common law. That's what we said and we did. So when we the people made that covenant with God, what man can break that covenant? None. We made a constitution. These people who we've given constitutional powers had no powers or authorities to do the things that they've done. They didn't have the opportunity to do the Organic Act of 1871 that created the city, which created a nation, a whole new country inside Washington, D.C. They didn't have that power and authority to do that. They didn't have the power and authority to do any of the things they've done. It's all null and void. It can be nullified by we the people just by getting the people into the courts and just saying no. When we train the people to come into the courts as a trial jury or even as a grand jury, and we empower them with the power of nullification, we empower them with the law of the land, we're going to give them an eight-hour, you know, orientation of what our founding fathers created here were a republic and what power and authority they're coming in. And they have to come in with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And the whole thing about a court case is the facts. That's what it's about, right and wrong, and let's repair the problem. Who is the violated and who has been violated and how can we fix the person who's violated and what do we want to do with the person who did the violation in order to help fix the person they violated? That's what the juries need to do. When they start doing that, then law will be applied in the courts. And if we apply the Constitution against these people and you bring them before a jury, the jury will see it and they'll rule the right way. The jury always goes the right way. And if they really can't figure it out, then become a hung jury, then they come with the decision, we can't make a decision, let them go. Okay? And that's the law of the land. And we can feel confident in that. Very rarely would you get an error there. But I mean, I'm sure you'll get people that will make errors, but very rarely. But on the way they got this whole process, there's a whole bunch of people in jail that don't belong there, not to even mention the fact that they're in jail for breaking, really committing no crime at all, you know? So it depends on how you want to look at that. Now, the quasi-government or the shadow government or whatever you want to call it that I was talking about was the fact that these people were out there actually, you know, getting people to become judges. And they want to go into their courts in the back rooms of Denny's or something and have a court session. They're putting liens on judges. And the liens they're putting on judges is without due process. I mean,
They're doing the same thing that they did that the government did to us. They're
right.
Using the same no process, no notice type process. I mean, they notice, but they don't do due process. You don't get to face your accusers. So they're doing the same thing that we just came out of. They're becoming them. And what we have here, look, a lot of it is smoke and mirrors. You got to remember, people need to educate, and they need to stand up, and they need to speak. Because
well, I agree to that, but I'm just thinking that my thoughts are anyway is that when the Congress committed the Feeney Die, and they didn't reassess the date, Lincoln took an action that was necessary to preserve everything and everybody, but it was a temporary thing, and he was reinstituting it, but he was killed knowingly and intentionally to prevent him from completing it, to reinsert the South once they corrected the disgusting thing, because the war really started over the debt. Didn't have anything to do with slavery. It just became an integral part of it.
It was money and it was politics.
It was debt.
There was bankers.
Europe had come up and the South didn't feel they were a part of owning that.
Right.
Because they weren't a part of the original 13 colonies during all those wars of France and of Germany. I mean of Britain. Because they fought wars for us and they wanted the colonies to pay for it. So those were debts that was passed on in the Confederation and in the Constitution. And then when there was no Congress to mediate the debt, Lincoln was in a spot because they were going to come and collect and, you know, repossess. So he did the only thing he could to secure everything, but it was temporary. And I spent a lot of time researching that aspect. So what I'm seeing is because we've not reclaimed and reinserted and redeclared it through the executive order process that put us there. My thinking is if something legal was done that put us in a condition, we have to go back to that point and correct it right from there to continue on.
There is no executive order process. Look, at the only purpose of an executive order ultimately is to give a particular order straight out on a record to someone under the authority of the president's administration. In other words, you've got a cabinet, okay? And all the federal agencies fall under the people that are in his cabinet. And when he gives an order or something to someone, he could do it officially by putting that order, and he could do it directly. He could bypass his cabinet members and go right down the line to a federal agency directly with a direct order from the president, and that's the only thing he could do. Presidents have used that over the years to actually make law, especially this president here.
Yeah, but
actually
he's not
create
real
law.
President. See, Lincoln was a real president.
Yeah, but Lincoln didn't have the power and the authority to do what he did. He didn't have that power and authority. So it was null and void from the beginning. And just because he made a statement, an executive order, and it wasn't rescinded, look, it is null and void because it's illegal to begin with. It doesn't have to be rescinded.
He's saying Lincoln was trying to save the nation, and they killed him before he could reset the things back into order. But our forefathers didn't leave us with a nation that hinged on.
Look, he did what was wrong to begin with. Let's go back to this whole thing. There was a lot more going on here in the Civil War, and I'm not going to say that I really am an expert in any way concerning what was happening back then and how things were going. I should go and study to see what really was going on, but as a general idea. But the bottom line is this. Here's the bottom line. The states have every right to be able to leave the Union. If they are breaking the law, if they are not holding up their end of the bargain, the federal government, then the state has every right to be able to leave that union.
Agreed.
That was all understood from the very day one.
They're not official states. They're franchises of the corporation.
Yeah, but nevertheless, that's all fiction. It's make-believe. It's not real. It's in the minds of the people, and the people believe it, and therefore reality is the way one perceives it. You know, people believe things all the time that's not true. It's a lie, and they live their lives by it. Okay,
that's a good point.
This is why the corporation, the fiction, wants rights like people. They want to treat corporations like they have unalienable rights. I never heard anything so ridiculous. They want to give them the same rights that we have. Now, the whole thing of a corporation is, what is a corporation? A corporation is something that is a fiction. It is a creation of the state. It is the fiction of the state. It owes its whole existence to. So to think that fiction could take over the people in their sovereignty and do something that would put the the master down below the servant is ridiculous. It is null and void. And look, at this is the Wizard of Oz is what it is. Let's not make it complicated. What John's saying, John is Glenda, the good witch. He's saying, look at Dorothy. You just click your heels together. You had the power to do it all along. That's us. We have the power to do it. They've used smoke and mirrors to get us to believe that they have this power, this authority, when they don't. If you hold it, right to the framework and the structure of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and what our founding documents, guess what? It falls right out, way outside of, it's very easy to see it then. So that's to click your heels, get rid of the smoke and mirrors and all the dog and pony show, and guess what? We can get back. You know, look at, even they don't even follow their own rules. You hear about the Libra Code and all this. Look, even in the code, it said things like if there was no active hostilities within so many miles or so many days, they still had to give you your constitutional court. But that you weren't operating under martial law, so to speak. So, and all that stuff was just temporary abilities in order for the government to get their feet back under them. It's up to the people, though. You can't have a martial law that runs on forever. You can't have a martial law to begin with. Martial law is for when you take over a country and you're going to reinstitute the government.
I understand that now. That's where the gold flag fringe comes from. Is from the army flag of martial rule, and when they conquered another country. And so that's what we're operating when we go into these courts. It's army. It's not admiralty. It's martial law.
Well,
it's
law
of the land, but it's martial law.
Right. But guess what? It was still with fraud. Some guy came in and he said, I don't like the flag, the fringe on the flag. That's martial law. So the judge got up and threw the flag in the hallway, came back down and said, you got any other problems? You see, because they don't care. They don't even know what that means.
They're just trampling over your stuff anyway.
Well, that judge probably didn't even know what it meant. He's probably just an ignorant guy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Probably figured it didn't make a difference. But look, they're definitely a shadow government in that respect. What John was talking about was a particular group that I call them Captain Crunch judges and Captain
Crunch. Yeah, I understand
Crunch
what he's talking about. That's what I'm referring to as well.
Right. Well,
they're trying to reinstitute where Lincoln took off as a legitimate president, right. and they're just what they're referring to as interim governments. They're not real governments. They're referring to themselves as interim governments until they get the numbers up to complete the accepted 10% quota of the state that they had to have, to enact. Enact their laws and so forth, which can't get everybody to agree on anything.
The only reason that they got to get 10% and do all that baloney is because they gave credibility to the fraud in the first place. Look, it should have never been. I don't care. You didn't have the right to do it in the first place. So we're not going to follow some magic prescription to get back to where we should have never left from to begin with. What is this, a game? Oh, I touched home. I'm safe now. You can't touch me because I got this magic stick over here.
We don't seem to have any magic pill to get out of anything.
No, they're not really skilled at
the law. The people that are trying to stand up, they're disappearing in droves. They're all in prison and jail. When we're losing many people, I see people all the time, every day. I got family members that are being pressed by it.
You're right.
It's unbelievable.
It is. And what happens is it only goes on for as long as it reaches a critical mass. And I think that's where we're at. I think people are waking up and they've had enough.
Because we got a president that's probably going to be more brutal in one area, but yet he's got promise. And that's showing people's desperation for real change back, but they don't know where they're going back to. They have no idea because they're totally ignorant of what's going on.
I'm
very knowledgeable myself, but still, I'm just I'm pressing everybody for everything I can get. So appreciate your taking the time to address that.
No problem. And look at the finger of God is here. Our destiny is in this, and so. that's what you have to have faith about. That where, look at, people get raised up all the time from different places. The Lord works with whoever he has to, you know. So he goes to the first choice, and then he takes the second choice, whatever place it has to go. It comes out of anywhere. Look at, you know, as far as Christians go, St. Paul was killing Christians, and then he became one of them. You know what I'm saying? So you don't know where the people are going to end up coming out of. You know what I mean? And right now, the way I see it, they've gotten to the point that the snake is eating the tail. They're even eating up their own people. They're starting to lose, you know, all that smoke and mirrors and the things that may... Look, it's a self-policing system. You know it is. People get paid, and they do stuff for money, and they don't care, and then they... You know, and then, you know, you start getting comfortable and doing more and worse things by increment. It's like the frog with the hot water in the pot doesn't jump out. And it's the same thing with people in government. They get used to a little bit and a little bit and a little bit, and before they realize it, they're criminals. And at some point, you can't tell me that these judges and the people up on the top that are doing all this stuff, that they don't know what they're doing is wrong. You're putting people that have worked all their lives out of their home, paid everything, paid illegal taxes, but paid them, and then you're kicking them out, in their golden years. Imagine that, their golden years, and you're stealing their properties. You can't do that every day and not at some point realize that what you're doing, that this country was never designed to be that kind of a country, ever.
Yeah,
you were supposed to be able to not pay any taxes in this country, and all you had to do was not participate in the taxable occupation that they were taxing. Well, let me see you not pay any taxes, not participate. I guess if you became like the Amish, maybe you could do that, and even they can't get away with it, I don't think. You know, just we've gone so far away from the ideal was. And look at. They said it was an experiment, and there was a couple things that they left undone, and we know what they are now, so it's up to us to fix it. And the only one who can fix it is the people, and it has to be come out of the common law grand juries, because that's the prescription. And look, you can do that on the local level, at the county level, and that would fix the whole nation. That's the great thing about this, that we can actually do it in our counties first, you know, and especially... If we win a good federal case, that's where it'll really take off, is when it gets back down into the counties and you start cleaning the counties up. Once they see it coming, believe me, the people that are in there that have these positions that don't want to lose their jobs, you see how fast they start doing the right thing. They'll learn that Constitution really fast. They'll know it chapter, verse, subsection, and everything, because they'll need to if they want to keep their jobs, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. But, I think that's where we're at, and I think that's what's going on, and I think these are exciting times, because I think we've reached a critical mass, and it's going to be very interesting to see what goes on.
Well, that's the only thing that I take, I guess, a little bit of pleasure in, is seeing the numbers, and seeing even these electors standing up to the socialist mentality. And all these actors in Hollywood, which I think they call it Hollywood, they're just so upset, and I'm just eating it up. I'm baking cakes and reveling, you know, and I'm enjoying seeing it for a change. I'm finished. Y'all have a good evening. God bless this organization. God bless America. I hope He does. I pray for it.
Pray for everybody. Needs to pray now. This is an important time. We can't get lax, because, you know, we have a little bit of a momentum, but we have such a.
I know there's huge numbers of people out there in different organizations, and still many of them in these other organizations. I know they're seeking and wanting the same thing. It's just desperation and ignorance, and people just simply looking for a way out.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I think more people prayed this election than ever.
Oh yeah,
because there was such a clear delineation in my mind between.
They couldn't even buy the numbers and cheat it. The dead people couldn't overcome their blind vote. That's pretty amazing.
Look at, It is amazing. It's very amazing, and to me, it's like a miracle. You know what I mean? That this was able to happen right now in the way that it happened, and it's good. Now I don't know. Watch out, because you know, it's got more than one head. This Hydra.
Yeah, well, I think we need to do a lot of praying on the behalf of Donald Trump and his organization to not only soften his heart in a lot of ways and bring him around to do Joba's way and to do what we really intended him to do. And I think we need to pray on that a great deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Amen.
Thank you very
Bye.
Much. Yeah. Okay, let's go to next question. Looks like Jeremiah from California. You are on.
Hey, Gerard. Hi, how are you? This is that's Jeremiah. Donald Zend again. Hopefully I'm doing good. Sounding a little bit like Brent there, aren't I? That's kind of intentional. I did that on purpose, just to fool with you. No, I'm just lying. Actually, I guess, you know, first of all, Habeas corpus seems to be kind of a federal thing, you know. I think that's important to look at, because you got to pose your federal question.
Yeah, because it's due process, mm-hmm. right? So it has.
They have state habeas corpus processes too, right?
I guess between agencies.
Well, they're really called. Let's just be correct here about our language. Mm-hmm. It's really called collateral proceedings. I mean, you can actually, you know, one of the things about being a kind of an off-brand law student is that you learn some of the inner workings of how lawyers think. And one of the things they like to do is in their books and writings is label things differently, but it has a similar, application. So a collateral proceeding is another word for habeas corpus, or another term. So, I mean, it is legalese, but for those common law people on here that don't use the legalese, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend you. But can you possibly speak to the correct sentence structure and how maybe the committees of safety with the common law grand jury foundational documents can trump any type of provision that may be used against them just on the basis of language alone. Just before we even argue legislative intent, let's just look at use of words and rules simply. Because I'm saying this because I want to know what you think, Gerard, about the impact of, you know, security, right, for these groups that are forming committees of safety, okay? They deserve security, and to be safe, a contract that's tight would really be an enormous help, don't you think?
Well, first of all, when people assemble, there's safety in numbers. Even fish in the sea do it. They get together. There's a safety in numbers. When you go to court, if you bring a bunch of people, you're much safer than if you go alone, right? So that's the first reason why the committees of safety are the gathering of people of like mind with like problems, and they need to discuss these problems, and they don't necessarily aren't able to do it at a town board meeting where things are controlled, and they don't necessarily let you speak about things that they don't want you to talk about. So then you find that it becomes necessary for the people to assemble outside of that body politic to discuss these problems, and then maybe
right.
go back into a meeting with a plan. That's what you
well,
should
maybe,
be doing. With your
well, the issue is, Gerard, I want to add to what you're saying by saying that the issue is not necessarily, right, that the forming of informations or even reports by grand juries, but the real issue is enforcement. How are we going to enforce even private these common law grand juries that are formed within the communities from the committees of safety, I mean, inspiration, from the committees of safety inspiration, they're basically going to be able to be protected through language in their contract, in their foundational documents. And really, when we look to security of the common law, we look to our foundational document.
Well, look, everything is already spelled out if we just follow it. Now, as far as the common law grand jury goes, until we get in the court and they recognize us, you don't have enforcement. That's why you want to befriend the sheriff. You want to have the closest elected official in law enforcement in with the people. That was the whole idea to having him be the top cop, because he answers to the people. That's the beginning of your enforcement there. There's other enforcement. That's not the only enforcement, but that's the most logical for one for us to water and to develop is with that is in that.
But when
direction.
all of that fails and the people have to actually form their own groups to be safe, you know, with the
well,
protection
that's
the, of
look at
possibly
that.
Local
We've been talking
militias.
About We've been
then,
talking about the
then,
militia, right?
At that point, yeah, well, at that point, there's going to be the necessity, you see, on the common law level, really, if you think about it, on the community level, for the people to literally communicate on a higher level, something that will, I don't mean to pardon my pun, okay, trump the legislation that will come against as an antagonist.
Well, they trump it already. if they put together a real grand jury in any county, if any judge let a real grand jury come in that was picked by the people and assembled for a specific purpose, incident or whatever, and let them go into court as a common law grand jury and then jury and trial jury follow that whole process through, that's the enforcement right there, because that if as long as they're doing that process, then whatever the jury says will be enforced by who? By this government that we gave all this money to, the guys that are holding the guns and stuff. They will have
Correct.
To do it if
okay.
it comes through
well, Gerard.
With a signed court order. Look at you. We should be. That's the other thing. Look at a county judge could be. This thing could be instituted at the county level in a county. Look, we're fighting the federal level because we want to try to get the whole nation back into shape with an inoculation here of the common law grand jury. But that doesn't mean that a judge can't at some point say, look, we're gonna allow this common law grand jury.
Okay. I love common law grand jury, and the idea of bringing something like this, because of Scalia's revelation, of course, really confirms these, well, let's just call them ideals. It's an ideal, but it's also about freedom, which is an ideal as well. And, you know, the common law grand jury has a very local effect, okay? And what I'd like to ask you is about how the impact of common law grand jury is going to have on administrative procedures on the local level, again, by municipalities and their agencies, because, again, we're dealing with legislation that's already been established to do the same job as the common law grand juries, so and also the committees of safety. So how are these private groups going to compete with something that's already well established? I think the only way is going to be through the language in the founding document.
Look at the language we've put in to our court cases, which can be mirrored at the counties, is look at their problem. What they're doing is their process. They're tampering with the juries, the way they're picking them, the questions they're asking them. The whole mess is a mess. I mean, if you wanted to document it and then go after that judge and that prosecutor and this guy for tampering with the jury and bring it into a court and let the people hear it, you should be able to win it, because there's nothing new. Just because they're doing something and they've been doing it this way because some legislator or somebody said that they could or they think they have a certain power, we can show them where they don't have that power, where they're not operating within the law.
And we have to start thinking in terms of separating the common law grand jury from the rest of the branches of government as if it were a fourth branch of the government, right? And we can do that through creation of a separate legislative state via comprehension of the language and taking things to another level where we question all ambiguity, where nothing gets passed to the people. See, this is how they're getting by through, let's just call it, they're making precedential administrative decisions, rules that govern the broad range of people and putting everyone into this big basket, right? As Hillary says, of deplorables. Jesus. Anyways.
Well, they're not supposed to be making legislation to control our actions and stuff. That's all baloney, and that's what they're doing. And that's look at when the people come in.
Oh,
and
not legislation. I thought I said administrative decisions, which actually act as rules. They treat those rules like regulations, basically.
Right. Okay? That's even worse.
And that govern the exactly.
That's absolutely worse. That's exactly what they do. They not only do they use administrative decisions, they use policy. They tell you that's our policy. Well, policy doesn't trump the law. And look at grand juries. I don't know. Look, there's still records of grand juries every so many months would go through and do like almost like an audit. They would go into these offices and see what they were doing with the money and what's going on here, and then they would return a report back to the county. They would send grand jury, they would send investigators in to look at these administrative procedures and then write a prescription if they saw that something was going wrong. This went on regularly for many years in this country until they started attacking the jury system. But early on, the grand juries and the juries were working pretty good. I mean, I saw, you know, where they went through everything that went on in that particular agency, you know, and they went through everything. They audited it. They literally audited it, and it was accepted.
Let me give you a case, okay? So here's the citation. It is Federation, right, of Labor versus Unemployment Insurance Appeals Board, 28 Cal Reporter 2D, 210 and 213, okay, and then it says court appellate, okay, court app, or 1994, yeah. And it says stating that precedent decisions, talking about agency decisions, are akin to agency rulemaking. Precedent decisions are akin to agency rulemaking, and if you know anything about rulemaking, they affect specific classes of persons, and therefore judicial recourse is available under Section 409 of the APA, you guys, 409.2, to persons affected by the precedent similar to recourse generally available against regulations. You see how they're doing it? They're using precedent decisions and treating them as if they are like regulations, you guys.
Right. And the other thing is you got to remember that the class of people that would be beholding to that are going to be somebody that is in that employ, not you and me. That's somebody in their agencies. They're not supposed to be putting that stuff on us. Look at a speed limit. Think of this, a speed limit. What do you need a speed limit for? I say it's more for government officials. Me driving in my capacity, in my sovereign capacity, look at my speed should be whatever's prudent. And if my speed is imprudent, then somebody can be injured by that and complain about that, and I could be taken to task for that. But when you have a government agency driving around, they're driving our cars with our money and our insurances, we could say, look it, you're not allowed to drive any more than these limits we put on the road, because that's where we want our employees driving
that's
at
funny.
Those speeds. And anybody else can drive however fast or slow they want, as long as they're not creating a hazard. That's the way it's supposed to work. Those rules are for them, not for us. And they think that that's terrible, that you don't want to follow the rules. Well, wait a minute. I know when it's snowy out, I don't care if the speed limit is 55. I got to do 20 if it's icy, or 10 or 5. And if I go faster and I hit something, I can be ticketed for speed imprudent for the conditions. But that's what being
right.
Free and a sovereign is all about. Your sovereignty, it takes maturity. It takes responsibility. Mm-hmm. You see, they don't want to give us that. They think you're too stupid to know to drive 35 miles an hour around that corner. We got to put warning signs. And look, I appreciate that the curve is coming up and it's 35. I follow those. Those are safety things, right? But if I do it at 40 and I do it comfortably because I got an Audi A8 and it handles real well and it was pretty safe and I didn't run anybody off the road, I should not be getting a ticket for that. I shouldn't even have to worry about it.
You're right. It's a misuse of the law. Just as a lot of times the law of nuisance is misused and abused, actually, by private business owners, where what they do is they go and they get police to try to kick somebody out that maybe they just don't like or whatever. So they create this facade as if this person's like a private nuisance, right? Well, that's actually not what that law is supposed to be used for. That's a whole other ball of wax. But with regard to administration of a statute, right? Not this article called "Illuminating a Bureaucratic Shadow World." I took a note from it, and one of those it said, "Not if you don't mind, not every principle essential to the effective administration of a statute can or should be cast immediately into the mold of a general rule. See, some principles must await their own development, while others must be adjusted to meet particular unforeseeable situations, like common law.
That's common law. That's right.
Right, exactly. But so in performing its important function in these respects, therefore, in performing its important functions in these respects, with regard to common law, okay, therefore, an administrative agency, with regard to common law, must be equipped to act either by general rule or by individual order. To insist upon one form of action to the exclusion of the other is to exalt form over necessity. You see what I'm saying? It's the same thing you're saying, only it's in legalese. But it's a real important point to make that it's like a mind game. There is a remedy out there available. Common law grand juries are, like, to me, super essential and pretty much a product of the time that we're living in because of the shadow, again, this is the shadow world of bureaucracy. Thank you so much.
And that's why we're all here. Thank you, Jeremiah.
Merry Christmas. Yeah. Merry Christmas, you guys.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, yes. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Jeremiah. Looks like Julie from Montana.
Yes, I was wanting to talk. I wanted to talk to John. Is he still around? I wanted to ask him. I've been trying to call him about having a three-way call with, you know, that pastor up in the.
I remember you mentioned that.
Upper part of Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was hoping that he was around so I could.
Well, he's not piping in, so he might not be. But you know what? I can remind him that I'm going to see him tomorrow.
Okay.
So I'll remind him that.
Okay.
Julie from Montana with the pastor.
Yeah. So I've been trying different times of day to get a hold of him and haven't had any luck, so.
Right. All right. Okay. Well, this is your number there, 406. That's you?
Yep. Uh-huh.
All right, so I'll write that down, and then maybe we can call you and set up a time or whatever, okay?
Okay, great.
But you try them again anyway, but I know, like, tomorrow in the morning we're busy, so I don't know. Maybe later in the day would be better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that clears out the queue, and it's 11:31. That's some kind of a sort of a what do you call it? A precedent. There we go. We got Jeremiah back in. So, all right, Julie, I'll see if I can get that number to John and see if we can get together to have some kind of a three-way call and see what's going on with that. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Gerard. Sorry.
Gerard, yeah. I got hurry up because I got Eric that went out and came back in. I know he wants to talk, and now I got
you in here three times,
so he'll skin me
nice.
If I don't take him. Okay.
Well, how about this? You want me to leave me open? I promise to mute myself, and then you can take me after him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me go for Eric, yeah. Eric, you're back in. Go ahead, buddy.
I just wanted to ask you if you knew what was it that FDR did that led to the creation or increase in alphabet agencies. And then also the paper that you wrote to President-elect Trump, I think there was something mentioned about how in the 80s some legislation came in that brought an artificiality to real estate. And I'm wondering if that's what created this whole environment about flipping houses. And then, of course, this inspired, you know, ambitious people to do the things that was mentioned earlier, you know, where all of a sudden these people want to go after these properties and make money off of it. And, you know, the bill collector is also the attorney who's writing the legislation, you know, that created that environment. Did that come from the 80s? Is that what y'all were talking about? And can you tell me more about that? And then the FDR thing, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, the FDR thing, you know, he did a lot of stuff that we're living with today. And a lot of the things that he instituted are the things that we're trying to undo today that have created this situation that we're in. And I can't get into the specifics of it all, although I think we outlined all the different things that he did, you know, that started us along this path. Because look at he came in right when the income tax and all that he helped facilitate all that stuff that was all legislation that wasn't really lawful in the long run. You know what I mean? And you know what did our forefathers say? Many of a usurpation is done under necessity. So you have a war and everything's necessary. I mean that's how we ended up in this war on terrorism. Oh, it's necessary. Even if they have to make a false flag to create the necessity to get us into the thing. And basically, FDR did a lot of that, many different things. I mean, if I could pick any one president that really brought us into this idea of this crazy money system and everything, it was him, because that was right. That was also the time that they outlawed gold and then brought it back in and they made a windfall profit on it. That was the beginning of everything, you know. Oh, how else can we make a profit? I mean, so much to the, so that they can't help themselves, even no matter what. Even 9/11, they had to go in the stock market and sell short the three airlines that they knew were going to crash. It's the biggest short selling day in Wall Street. And guess what? We don't know who those corporations were. Why? Because all the records for that supposedly fell in Building 7. I mean, how convenient, right? Oh, yeah, and a plane hit the Pentagon. Where did it hit it? Well, it just so happened to hit it in the place where the auditors were all working to find the $2 trillion that was missing in the military. And guess what? They don't have any more records. All those auditors were killed. And yes, we know that the government doesn't know how to keep things off of paper, right? They got clouds. They got all the latest technology. But all that information was burned up when the so-called plane hit the building and went through 12 block brick walls 2 foot thick to get to the auditors. I mean, this is the type of crap that we have going on, and we're so stupid. Well, we were stupid, but, you know, they've played us. And it started with all the stuff that FDR did, and it's culminated today to where we are, to where we're doing all kinds of crazy stuff for an agenda, for certain people to make money, because that's what they're all about. This pay to play and all this other garbage that's going on, you know, it's really turned into like a Las Vegas casino is what it's happened, you know.
Yeah.
And we're just reaping all that, and of course the average person, you know, they get greedier and greedier, and so there was a time when you could, if you followed all the rules, even though it was a pain and they were taking, you know, 20%, 30%, 40%, you could make money. You know, you could flip houses, you could get apartments, and you could get houses and single family houses, and then you could fix them up and you could put them out there and you could hold the mortgages on them, and all the, I mean, I was going to get into that, you know what I mean? And it wasn't terrible or anything, but at what happens is they keep changing the rules, and when the average guy figures out what to do to make money, they change the rules so that only they can do it. And every time we figure something out, they change the rule. And pretty soon, the rules end up becoming that thing that they're operating with, that's like, it's a nasty thing now, and they're calling it the law, right?
Yeah, you know,
taking little old ladies' houses away. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know, I was just going to say that there's this book, and I don't know. I mean, it's been some years since I looked at it. I only read, say, the first 30 pages. But this fellow Rushkoff, you probably know, I think he's a New Yorker. He talks about how in the Renaissance, the mercantile class was growing, and the royalty, they had plenty of money, but what they didn't like was that this mercantile class was growing, and they wanted in on that money, so they started changing the game anyway. It just sounds a lot like what you just said, that as soon as the regular guy learns how to make money, they change the rules. It just sounds like the same thing, of course, like you
absolutely
always say.
Right.
Nothing new under the sun.
No.
So does the art of where specifically does the artificiality come into? What created this environment where you know, flipping houses? I mean, it just seems that now our properties are nothing more than disposable, and that in a common sense way, it just seems really unsavory and unhealthy, and will lead to destruction, which is what it's done, right? So, I mean,
I don't know what specific thing did it, or if it was a culmination of things. You know, people got into corporations as time went on. You know, the corporate thing has been misused. I mean, there's a reason for a corporation. But, of course, you know, they got in and figured out how to make money and how to shield themselves. And so it all turned into this corporate thing. I mean, look at the United States. You know, when you talk about the shadow government and stuff, that is a corporate overlay that is unconstitutional. So if I had to point to any one thing, I would point to two things. I would point to the corporate system and the Bar Association, because those are the two places that they really played the games on us, you know. I mean, look at, we have the capital United States government is a corporation. And we even, look at, we had a president and a vice president. We Halliburton was contracting the wars that we were getting into, was getting the military contracts. Were we stupid? The conflict of interest, having Dick Cheney supply all this stuff to the military in these places that we had no business being in the first place, and we created the problems and told everybody there was weapons of mass destruction and we had to go in there, and then they got into everything, and they always do with every war. I mean, I know guys that were over there, and they said, we cannot take our laundry to the local people. We have to use the military contractor, and I can get my laundry done $2-3 from the local guy, but the military contractor, if we go to the local people and not the guy that's contracted through whatever agency it was, NGO, non-governmental organization, that got the contract to do the military's laundry in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, because they were charging the guys $12-15 versus the $2 normal fee in that country that everybody else paid, you see? And so these guys are collecting all this money, making profits on wars, and these are our president and vice president. Were we stupid? Were we asleep? Yeah. We couldn't see that? Nobody was screaming about that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, we got lulled, and we had, you know, they told, oh, well, you can do this and make money and that, and we, I think we got lost in the lie, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Have you seen the made me think of what you said the other night, or what you say? I saw this commercial. I've seen a series of them, and it sounds like what you say. You know, like the devil when Jesus is out in the desert, and he's like, "Hey, you know, all you got to do is confess your loyalty to me, declare it to me, and I'll give you the lux life." There's this commercial, and it's about a fast and easy way to check your credit. And the premise of the commercials are that this one guy is going to have to ride a bus if he doesn't have good credit, you know, and no one wants to ride the bus. And then another one, this girl, she can't afford to live without roommates, and her roommates are really wacky, and they do weird things at weird times of day. Anyway, it's just the same thing over and over again. It's... You give in to us, and you can have a good and comfortable life. Is it a public record, the three airlines that sold short? I mean, is that something you can readily find online?
The three what?
The three airlines from 9/11.
Oh,
is that something you can readily find?
Oh, yeah, I could find that for you. Yep, it's a fact.
Yeah, you know, I was just curious. It,
Yeah.
Okay.
It's out there. Matter of fact, it might be popular enough. That used to be considered very fringe stuff, but it's absolutely not. And I saw some really, you know, I go on so many different sites. I forget where I read everything, but it's actually gotten to the point of being common knowledge at this point between anybody that's doing research. That it's, you know, it's out there. And there was a lot of anomalies that are out there that we're gonna find out when the time comes. And it's, and that's, you know, part of I think, in my opinion, this is just me, I think that part of their strategy, because they never let anything go to waste, is gonna be revealing everything to us at the right time so that we become overwhelmed that we can't believe it. That there was all this fraud and corruption. That's when the real fraud's going to come in and say, see, your system didn't work. Now I got a better system. You know what I mean? That whole Constitution thing, that's baloney. It didn't work because, you know, meanwhile, it didn't work because they didn't follow it, right? But they're going to sell us something. They're going to reveal the fraud. They're going to reveal the crime. They're going to tell on each other. And then they're gonna sell us the solution. Isn't that what they always do? Problem, reaction, solution. Make the problem, and then give us the solution to the problem that they created. Well, guess what? The grand deception is coming. Don't you just wait for it. We better be awake when that one happens.
Because hopefully, what you and John have endeavored to do will be enough. Hopefully, by then, enough people will be awake, and we can. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. Now.
Okay, take it easy.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, Eric. Yeah. Colorado Ollie. What's going on?
Hey, Gerard. Hey, Gerard, I'll give you a quick example of due process and common law. This cop called up the station and he said, Mrs. O'Leary shot her husband for stepping on the floor she just mopped. And the captain says, have you arrested her? And he says, not yet. The floor's still wet.
He didn't want to get shot, did he?
that's all I got. We'll talk at you later, George.
Okay, thanks. Holly. Yeah. Okay, we got Colorado Terry in the queue. Go ahead, Terry. You've been unmuted, believe it or not. Colorado Terry, hello.
Okay.
Yes, I can.
Okay, sorry. I had my mute on, but I didn't think I did. I just wanted to give you a piece of information. Jim Rickards, with a K, R-I-K-K-A-R-D-S, wrote a book called Currency Wars, and it explains all of this stuff and who was involved in the 9/11 and how the Iraqis and Iranians cornered the market on the airlines and sold short and gained a lot of money from that destruction because they knew it was going to happen.
Right.
And that's all fact. He's all got it. It's all backed up in there.
You know what? I did get his book. He mailed that everywhere. He sent a lot of free copies of that book out.
It's a good book.
That man needs a mention because he's done so much with the money system and his, you know, I subscribe to a lot of his stuff, Rickards and his whole group, you know, and Sansbury Associates and all that. They've been very, very good with laying them out. And look at, they make tons and tons and tons of money because they have discernment and they study history and they know what's going to happen next just based on what's happened before in similar situations. It's not real complicated. You know, men keep doing the same thing all the time. You know, stock charts.
He's written two more books since then. So
look, he's very good. And I think I have his book here, but I never sat down and read it from end to end. But you're right. I mean, I read so many things and browse things, and I forget where I heard him and saw him. But Jim Rickards is very good. Thank you for bringing that up, because I couldn't remember. You know, but he does a very good job. Okay, the queue is down there. I think we have Jeremiah back in. And we got like, it's 11:46. So go ahead, Jeremiah. We got a few minutes.
Okay. Well, I had a couple of things. One thing is I wanted to ask you
First, I have an article that I think is kind of important because it involves the IRS and it also involves hackers and the DA. And this is from, actually, this is from like about a week or two ago, but I still think it's really, really relevant. But apparently, in the midst of the Internal Revenue Service's legal battle to uncover the identities of Bitcoin users, okay, federal prosecutors have revealed that one district attorney's office had a battle for its own private information also involving Bitcoin. Pennsylvania's Allegheny County District Attorney's Office apparently paid a Bitcoin ransom to protect the privacy of its own digital information. The amount of the ransom was relatively small, only $1,400 in good old dollars. But, yeah, so $1,400 in good old dollars. But it's still remarkable to see, you know, a DA's office paying a ransom to a group of hackers, and even more so in a digital currency such as Bitcoin. Interesting. Don't you think?
I you know what? I'm not even sure what you're saying, that they were dealing in Bitcoin, the DA's office?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no kidding.
To the hackers that stole their information.
Oh, no kidding.
So
they used Bitcoin to pay the hackers because it's not traceable. And that's why
I'm not saying why they used it, but the article said, this is what the article says. This is from the Daily Journal.
Well, they paid hackers off, and they used Bitcoin. You know, I guess they could have delivered cash, but then the hackers would have to be arrested, wouldn't they?
Right, and just check this out, though. The crucial part of this is that the revelation came just days after the U.S. District Court in the Northern District of California ordered that the IRS may serve a John Doe summons on Coinbase Incorporated. Coinbase is an online platform of digital currency, a wallet that allows users to exchange and transact with digital currency such as Bitcoin. And a John Doe summons allows the IRS to get names and account details from Coinbase. So anonymity may go out the window, in other words. So one can imagine that some Coinbase users would gladly pay a ransom if they could, to avoid the IRS finding them. So that's interesting. I mean, do you think it's possible? I mean, like, are people really going to resort to, evading paying their taxes, or are they just going to learn the law? That's one question. But the other question I had was regarding two types of administrative agencies. And the first question is rhetorical, so we don't even need to answer it. But you can address the issue.
I'm sorry? Too tight. I
was going to say, if you wanted to address the issue of the hackers one more time, that's fine. But I would like to ask you this other question about two administrative agencies, basically being, you know, like, say, for example, like labor unions or like the FDA. They may have their own administrative tribunals for, you know, things that happen, and also I think the Bureau of Land Management might actually fall into that category as well. But the what's interesting is that's one type. So there's a governmental there, and then there's a non-governmental, two types of administrative agencies. And that's why I was trying to ask the question earlier. And did you hear my question earlier about the municipalities?
No.
Who are the agencies? Are they agencies is my question, sir, because I'm really curious to find out that if they're not created by the legislature, right, then, and they're created by the people,
right?
Wouldn't they have to, as arm of the state, actually be abide by a lot more scrutiny? They'd have more scrutiny, right, than something created by the state legislature. And so they would be able to opt out of certain issues or things to have more local concerns addressed. But the issue was I was thinking is that these people were actually administrative agencies, and the APA would apply to them, and that it doesn't actually apply to the type of administration that is when it comes to employment contracts and stuff like that. That's different. That's a different type of administrative agency compared to the one that I'm referring to. That's really affecting millions of Americans. You know?
Well, that's the problem, that all these administrative agencies don't have the authorities that they take, I believe, you know.
Well, which ones? That's all I'm trying to say. Which administrative agencies? I'm talking about two types.
Mm-hmm.
The
no,
one
I don't,
type
I,
on
yeah.
being the ones that have more to do with a corporation's procedures, right? Like
mm-hmm.
and Walmart or whoever. Let's just say Walmart has their own tribunal set up. And they do have internal policies. That's a different type of administrative agency with rules. Like, for example, BART. Actually, let's take BART, for example. That's the Bay Area Rapid Transit, right? They have their own municipal code. They are basically what I consider to be an administrative agency.
That's all through contract.
Now, but it's not governmental, so all their security guards have the power of the state, but through some sort of, like, weird nexus with the state. You see, they're like a private administrative agency, but now they have some governmental arm because of their involvement with the people.
But
it doesn't make sense.
Do they really? Look at you and I can be an armed guard. Mm-hmm. You and I can be a neighborhood watch. If you see somebody committing a felony, you don't need permission or anything. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that doesn't make us have police powers under the state, except for when we're enforcing those laws that we live under that are constitutional, right? In other words, I don't know what they're blurring or why they, you know, I mean, there's definitely a blurring, and they mm-hmm. use it to their advantage. And I don't want to lose my train of thought because I wanted.
It was in the charter because if it's chartered, then that means
they're all chartered, are they not?
Well, no, not necessarily. Some counties are established under the state legislatures. A chartered city and county is something autonomous. So that's why I was saying, you know.
Well, you know, like, what they tell me here, because we're running out of time. They tell me that an unincorporated town is still incorporated under the county and the state because they're arms of that. I mean, it's almost like they're doing these S corporations, like they're saying, well, they fall under us because they belong to us, and they're speaking strictly. I think what it is they're speaking strictly from this corporate veil. You understand? So the town doesn't actually have to incorporate to enjoy the protections of that corporate charter up at the county and the state level. They put them under the veil because they're melding them. Look at they got a unified court system, this and that. They're all dipping out of the same till. And so they're using their rules and regulations on the people. And if you go to the town and it's not incorporated, but guess what? It still has the protection of the attorney general.
Well, here's
when it
why.
Comes
because,
time to sue them.
Because, like, here's the thing. The municipalities are basically an arm of the state. They are. And the same way the states have to abide by federal rules and also the federal precedent, the municipalities have to abide by the state precedents.
Right.
So that's why when you have municipalities that want to opt out of state laws that would serve to protect the people in order.
Oop, I don't know what happened. The queue went away. So it says that call. Oh, he got hung up, I think. Anyway, I don't know what happened with Jeremiah, but we're just about done. The one point I wanted to make before he got off on the charters and all that is, this whole business of Bitcoin and you know, hackers and the government using this alternative currency, that's all designed, I believe, to vilify cash, so that if you do any kind of anonymous dealings between people, that somehow you're outside of the law, and that's what they're going to do. You know, they want to have a cashless society, where nothing is anonymous. Every single penny you spend goes through a barcode. They know where it is and where it went. And you know, look, they want control over everything. I mean, they even want to track barcodes on things you buy to figure out the life of it. It just gets so crazy with, you know, these smart houses are going to keep track of everything. I mean, they have this crazy dream of this digital world that we're going to live in that's going to be this digital nirvana. But you're never going to do anything that the main source of that structure doesn't know about. You're not going to be able to turn sideways. They're going to know what you're doing. That's ultimately what it is. And one of the first steps is to do away with anonymous transactions. Everybody's going to know your business because it's all going to go in on a computer chip. And they have to do away with cash because they won't be able to control it. But they'll never do away with things like gold and silver and barter. That's the fallacy of the whole thing, that people will always deal in that. And of course, their whole thing is to vilify that and say, oh, that's a black market. You must be doing something no good. You're not honest or this and that. No, you want privacy. Sometimes you want privacy. You know, we're entitled to those things. We're supposed to be secure in our papers and our things. What does that mean? Oh, okay, there's no more paper, so I guess you're not secure anymore. We did away with paper, you know, the Paper Reduction Act, the paperless bill. Well, yeah, there's no more. Nothing's on paper anymore, so everything is in digital bits and bytes, and this is where we're going, and this is what we need to stop. But anyway, it's almost 12 o'clock, and we got to go now, so we'll pick this up next week. I'm sorry if we didn't get to you. Thank you, everybody. And we'll see you next week. Same time, same station. Have a good night.